Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
You know, I'm great. I apologize. I got in really late last night, so when that alarm went off this morning, I felt every minute of 52.
Well, and this is the welcome to my world.
Yes, no, you talk about new respect. That early morning stuff every morning, and you always sound chipper, so I got to tell you, I have a lot of respect for the hours you keep.
Well, I was looking at some news stories tracking the races across the nation this November. And everyone is saying that this is going to be a make-or-break year for the Democrats. Talk to us a little bit about the importance of winning this race for the Democratic Party, for progressive folks, for liberal folks out here. How much of a difference will this election make if you win this election?
Well, people need to understand that we are six seats short of the majority in the Senate and 15 seats short of a majority in the House. You know, and I know it's really easy to think, what difference does it make? Mm-hmm. They're all the same, same talk, no difference. But if you look at what has happened under this administration with the rubber stamp of the Republican Congress, we've cut funding for college education for the first time. Pell grants have been cut. You know, we've got 47 million uninsured people in this country in terms of health insurance, and that just keeps getting bigger. I mean, you know, in every measure, we've gone 9 years without increasing the minimum wage. By the way, Congress has taken their pay raise every year. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if in all of the you know, funding to public education, taking care of health care, you know, shoring up Social Security, making sure people's pensions are secure, raising the minimum wage, all of these things have all been put to the side. If you change the numbers, you change the agenda. You go from just talking about the powerful to going back to a time that we can empower. Mm-hmm. And that really is what it boils down to. And this race in Missouri.
All eyes in the nation are on this race. Why is that?
Well, it's because we kind of reflect the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if most Missourians realize this, but we voted for the winning candidate for president in 25 of the last 26 elections. And if, in fact, this nation is ready to say, you know, we've had enough of President Bush's agenda. We want to go back to a president that understands we need to make friends in the world. We need to go back to a president that understands this should be about working families in the middle class and not just the people on Wall Street. You know, and if we win here, then we have a shot of doing that. If we don't win here, we don't have that shot because this is an essential seat to get to that majority in the Congress.
There are folks out here, I include myself in it, in that group of people that have struggled with the performance of the Democrats while being in the minority. And as a person that, as a woman of African descent, I occupy a minority position in this country. So it is problematic to me and troublesome to a lot of people out here that they have seen within the Democrats and unwilling, what appears to be, and in some cases is, an unwillingness to fight because they're in the minority. What would you bring to that position? How would you be able to assure the listeners out here that you are not going to be like other Democrats out here that didn't fight, didn't stand up, didn't, you know, so what? You're in the minority. That means you're supposed to fight harder.
Well, and, you know, I can't quarrel with what you're saying. I think there's a lot of folks that have gotten out there and they get caught up in being important and mm-hmm. being, you know, a United States senator. And they start talking in three or four paragraphs, and you listen to it, and you say, well, you know, it really sounds pretty, but they didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of senators, regardless of party, they're more interested in staying in office mm-hmm. than they are in getting it done. And so I don't quarrel with that, but I will tell you, having looked at the record, there's a lot of Democrats that have been trying. I mean, just for example, we've lost $9 billion in Iraq, just mm-hmm. disappeared. there have been Democrats that have pushed for hearings of accountability on where that money is.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the votes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't hear about it
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I look forward to joining those folks. Mm-hmm. There are some of them out there that are fighting hard to try to bring some accountability back to these folks that are just looking after the folks in the boardroom instead of the folks out here that are working hard.
We're going to take a break. I'm talking to Claire McCaskill. This is Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
This is George Cotton.
And I'm Syl Wilson, and we're your hosts of the show The Real Deal.
And it looks like our show is moving to drive time.
That's right. No more late evenings for us.
Tune in from 4 to 5 p.m. every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evening.
We'll keep you up on what's going on and maybe even make you angry with our weird way of looking at life, politics, and race relations in America.
The Real Deal with George and Syl every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evening.
Tune us in, and we'll take you home.
Caller, away!
Folks, that's the Sloan Ranger. Catch him weekdays at 5 p.m. here on WGNU.
Aquí está lo que estabas esperando, la nueva Radio Mix. Sintonízanos todos los domingos de 6 a 8 de la noche a partir del 3 de septiembre por WGNU 920 AM. Entrevistas, eventos y la mejor música para ti. Radio Mix, la nueva de San Luis.
It's another wake-up call exclusive. Does AIDS really exist?
When the researchers told you that worldwide 35 million people have been infected and 5 million have developed AIDS, you believed them. What about when they told you that minorities, primarily blacks and Hispanics, now account for some 54% of the more than 5 million cases of AIDS? You believed them, right? So what if someone told you that AIDS didn't exist? Would you believe?
Investigative journalist Liam Sheff joins Liz Brown Tuesday, September 19th at 8 a.m. for a two-hour look at whether the AIDS epidemic is real or a real hoax, exclusively on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
This portion of the Wake Up Call is sponsored by Committee to Elect Claire McCaskill, Sandra Cleary, Treasurer.
Oh, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. And my name is Liz Brown. We are having a discussion this morning with Claire McCaskill, State Auditor, senatorial candidate. And Claire, we were talking about fighting on the way out, about looking for a United States senator that will not be afraid to fight.
You know, I want people go back and look at my record. You know, Liz, this hasn't always been easy.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first woman several times, and you know, first woman is the prosecutor in Jackson County, and you know that's kind of the law enforcement world is pretty solid in terms of not exactly being welcoming, especially back when I was running,
mm-hmm.
to the idea that a woman would mm-hmm. take that job. And I fought for that job. I wasn't supposed to win it. I fought for it. I was in the neighborhoods fighting for it instead of being the political choice, and I won. And if you look, I know it was tough. when I took on the governor of my own party. That was a very, very tough situation.
I remember that race very well.
And it was painful for a lot of people in the community. But underneath it, people have to realize that that was a very hard thing to do, mm-hmm. and I was willing to do it. And, you know, I've been doing this a while, and the other good thing about that is I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about speaking truth to power. I've learned a lot about how to be effective and hold your ground. I'm a fighter. I wouldn't be, and frankly, I wouldn't have made it this far if I wasn't a fighter. And I've got a really healthy independent streak in me, which I think is what we need out there, somebody who will speak to both parties when they're not, you know, doing what they should do, when they're trying to play games to pretend like they're passing ethics legislation when they're not really, mm-hmm. which they did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no independent review of any of their ethical discretions in Congress, which is really wrong.
You know what? There's also not a database that we as citizens out here can tap into to see where people are spending their money.
They just finally passed that in the last few weeks ago. With respect to the budget stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it remains to be seen how mm-hmm. transparent it'll be.
Mm-hmm.
But that came about because people, a lot of the community out there that's talking on the internet and on mm-hmm. some of these blogs, mm-hmm. they pushed, and somebody had a secret hold. Well, there shouldn't be secret holds. What kind of nonsense is that?
But that was the beauty of that story, that we got to find out about the ability to have a secret hold, and then who was doing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like these earmarks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the number of lobbyists in Washington have doubled under the Bush administration.
And why is that problematic?
Well,
and what does that say?
What it says is that if there's a lobbyist who knows a congressman, you can get something done. You know, if he knows the right congressman or woman, you get a project. I mean, the earmarks, people need to understand what earmarks are. Earmarks are projects that are put in bills that never have a hearing, that are secretly inserted, and, you know, everybody gets them, and it's one of these wink, wink, nod, nods, and they have gone off the Richter scale in terms of how many earmarks are going on out there. In the highway bill, for example, there were over 6,000 earmarks in the highway bill, including the one that became famous, the bridge to nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about this, $250 million for a bridge going nowhere. At the same time, we're cutting Pell Grants.
Let's jump to health care for a second, because that's a personal thing for me with respect to the impact that it has on seniors out here. I want to do a little compare and contrast right now. I want people to understand the world that they're living in right now under Jim Talent. What is his record on this, and then how do we compare his record to your record?
Well, I can start out by saying that Jim Talent has voted to cut Medicaid 19 times, and that's 19. And when the Governor Blunt promised in the campaign he wouldn't cut Medicaid, and then with breathtaking speed kicked 100,000 people off Medicaid, Senator Talent sat silently and said nothing. Now, people need to understand, when Blunt did that, not only did 100,000 people, children and elderly, lose Medicaid in this state, but at the same time, we gave back $700 million to the federal government in federal funds. In other words, what we saved in Missouri dollars was a fraction of what we gave up in federal funding. Now, if I were the United States Senator, and a governor of Missouri had taken that action, I would have said, wait a minute, you're giving up $700 million that belongs to Missouri in terms of health care dollars. By the way, that money, you know, was shipped and spent in other states. I mean, you know, it went back to Washington to be redistributed and spent somewhere else. So,
and let alone, not only would you have said something, but how would you, even if the governor decided not to do it, not to ignore what the United States senator said, would you have remained silent on the issue?
That's when you've got to go to work and try to get that money. You've got to convince your colleagues in Washington that you've got to get that money to your state for health care another way. You know, they can't overrule what the governor, ultimately the Medicaid program as to how it's run is decided by the governors of each state. But you've got a lot of leverage because how much money comes out of Washington to the states.
And don't we also, one of the things that people criticize people are concerned about is the concentration of power. We have the House majority Republicans, we have the Senate majority Republicans, and we have a Republican in the White House. That's kind of what we're having here in the state of Missouri, isn't it, when we have a Republican governor and then Republican senators?
We have, you know, for the first time that you and I have been around, We have all Republicans all the time. We have Republicans running the legislature in Jeff City. We have a Republican in the governor's mansion. We have Republicans running the House of Representatives. We have Republicans running the Senate in Washington. And we have a Republican president. And we are getting exactly what the Republican Party wants. And if people don't think there's a difference between the parties, just think for a minute. Does anyone really believe that a Democratic governor would have cut 100,000 people off Medicaid?
It wouldn't have happened.
Would not have happened.
It wouldn't have happened.
And that's why it's important. That's why it makes a difference. And by the way, that's why they work so hard to deprive people of the right to vote this November.
And before we get to the voter ID, I want to make one more quick point with this Mattole majority piece. On Meet the Press, they had George Allen and Webb on in Virginia. And one of the things that Webb asked George Allen was the impact of Allen's loyalty to George Bush over his responsibility to the citizens of Virginia. Is that another concern that we should have in terms of Jim Talent and his relationship and loyalty to George Bush over our issues?
You know, I think one of the things that, you know, in campaigns, things get twisted and distorted, and people kind of try to get dressed in a different kind of outfit, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of like the folks that they go around all week looking sloppy and then look really good on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Or show up on Sunday.
You know, Senator Talent has been the best friend to George Bush. I mean, he has been...
How do we measure that?
Well, by how often he votes with him. He votes with the president 94% of the time. I don't agree with my husband 94% of the time. In fact, not even close.
Mm-hmm.
94% of the time, that is a really fine friend.
Mm-hmm.
And for him now to represent himself as this nonpartisan, reaching across party lines, I'll tell you who was a nonpartisan last week. The nonpartisan last week was Senator Warner, Senator McCain, Senator Graham, that stood up to the president and said, you know, we're not going to...
Torture!
We're not going to get rid of the Geneva Convention. We're not going to play with a treaty and an agreement that has served the world for 57 years in terms of a code of conduct. We're going to protect our military. And that is nonpartisan. That was not Senator Talent.
Well, it's kind of scary that it's scary with about a person that sticks with somebody on a loyalty issue when your job is to be representative to all people.
I'll give you another good example. When Harriet Myers was appointed by the president to the Supreme Court, and there was reaction from all the senators. Now, most of the senators kind of like held back.
Mm-hmm.
Not Senator Talent. No, he thought Harriet Myers was great. Now, of course, as the thing developed, the Republican senators that were not completely rubber stamping the president said, you know, President Bush, this is not somebody who's ready to be on the Supreme Court. She doesn't have the qualifications. She doesn't have the background. And it became very clear that the independent Republican senators were telling the White House, Harriet Myers won't work. But not Senator Talent. Senator Talent was right there. Whatever the president wanted, he was ready to rubber stamp it.
Well, there's kind of two ways to look at that. Either someone with the woeful quote-unquote qualifications of Harriet Myers was good enough for Jim Talent, or secondly, he put loyalty above concern about his constituents. And neither one of those are good.
Yeah, it's what you think about first. When you've got an issue in front of you, what do you think about first? Do you think about your party? Do you think about the lobbyists? Do you think about your campaign contributors? Or do you think about the people you represent? That people you represent needs to be first and only. And the rest should not be a consideration at all.
Let's talk about the Jim Talent Protection Act. Let's talk about the voter ID bill. What was Jim Talent's role in that?
Well, it was very behind the scenes, and you know, he supported it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no question in Jefferson City when people tried to present something reasonable to the Republican Party, like if you are serious about the election process, why don't we look at this for the 08 election?
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to change the way people identify themselves, give us time to educate people and to get the necessary tools in their hands so they can still vote. Oh, no. No, we had to rush this through, and it had to apply in November. They knew that the most vulnerable in our community would be denied a right to vote. And they're the ones that have been hurt by the Republican Party. So it was like getting rid of the voters that had the most at stake in this election. And people should be offended at their effort.
And we're going to take another break. I'm talking to Claire McCaskill. We're talking about the upcoming Senate race in November. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me.
This portion of the wake-up call is sponsored by Committee to Elect Claire McCaskill, Sandra Query, Treasurer. Morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather, or this hour's weather. This hour's weather. Let's take a look. Sunny this morning, becoming partly cloudy throughout the day, high in the mid-60s. This evening, colder, clear, with a low in the upper 30s in the suburbs and the mid-40s somewhere in the city of St. Louis and surrounding areas. For Wednesday, sunny with a high around 70, and Thursday, partly sunny skies in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day, a high in the lower 70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 51 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 51. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your ABC News at the top of the 8 o'clock hour and a quick look at your weather. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Not since the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s can I think of any bigger initiative that will empower African Americans to have control over their life than the stem cell initiative.
Dr. Michael DeBon, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Washington University School of Medicine, explains why medical experts, faith leaders, and community leaders urge a yes vote on Amendment 2, the Missouri Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative on the November state ballot.
Diabetes, sickle cell disease, hypertension. These are the type of diseases that occur in our families, in our community. Stem cell research could lead to cures for those diseases and many others. Please join me in voting yes on the Stem Cell Initiative to ensure that all Missourians will have equal access to future stem cell cures. Thank you.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. Sandra Oss, Treasurer.
Everything's coming up roses.
Hey, everybody. I'm Scott Cooper. I want to invite you to tune in to my show, Floral Design Inside and Out, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. right here on WGNU. Join me as I take you on a journey inside the incredible world of flowers. I'll entice you with ideas from weddings to home entertaining and so very much more. I'm all about flowers and a whole lot of fun. Please join me Tuesdays at 10 a.m. as we stop and smell the flowers right here on AM 920 WGNU.
It's another Wake Up Call exclusive. Does AIDS really exist?
When the researchers told you that worldwide 35 million people have been infected and 5 million have developed AIDS, you believed them. What about when they told you that minorities, primarily blacks and Hispanics, now account for some 54% of the more than 5 million cases of AIDS? You believed them, right? So what if someone told you that AIDS didn't exist? Would you believe?
Investigative journalist Liam Sheff joins Liz Brown Tuesday, September 19th at 8 a.m. for a two-hour look at whether the AIDS epidemic is real or a real hoax, exclusively on the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
This portion of the Wake Up Call is sponsored by the Committee to Elect Claire McCaskill, Sandra Query, Treasurer.
Welcome back. This is Liz Brown. I'm having a conversation this morning with Claire McCaskill, candidate for the United States Senate. And before I get back to Claire, we had some callers that had to go, but wanted to ask a question of where can they get some yard signs? Where can they get, how can they get involved in the campaign?
918-VOTE. Mm-hmm. If people call 918-VOTE and we can hook you up with yard signs, we need volunteers, we need people who will make phone calls. We have offices all over the area, you know, all over the greater St. Louis area. We have lots of offices, so you can go someplace nearby and work and pick up yard signs, or we'll be happy to work with you in terms of delivering. If you want to do some work, we'll be happy to deliver some stuff to you. But 918-VOTE, we need you.
Okay, very good. Now, let's get back to the voter ID piece. You're a lawyer. I'm a lawyer. Jim Talent's a lawyer, okay? It's amazing to me to see something like this voter ID bill come down and the lawyer Jim Talent not be awakened to the problems with that.
Yeah, and let's be very clear here. You know, none of us want the election process to be flawed. I mean, I did an audit of the St. Louis Election Board. I know there have been problems with elections. Frankly, the problems have been more incompetence in terms of making sure the voter lists are accurate. It hasn't been that people have been voting who weren't who they said they were.
Exactly.
That has not been the problem.
So the system has been working from the perspective of people have not been able to vote who dead people aren't voting.
Correct. And you know, we found some instances where people were voting that shouldn't have been voting because of they had been disqualified, but not that they weren't who they said they were.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we figured out they shouldn't be voting. They were who they said they were.
Okay.
So, you know, the problem they were attacking in terms of people trying to vote who wasn't the right person really wasn't a problem that had ever been documented. And so this was all kind of an effort to get at a problem that wasn't really there. And, you know, the law is very clear that it's a right to vote, and you cannot do anything that makes it a burden.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
a privilege. It's a right.
It's a right. And so the fact that they were saying that they were going to send vans out, what I thought was startling was the admissions they made publicly that showed that they weren't serious about getting voter ID cards to people who didn't have them. They said, well, we're not going to send vans into the poor neighborhoods where there might be somebody who doesn't have a driver's license that has not driven. You know, they weren't going to even do that. They weren't even trying. I mean, she basically, the director of the Department of Revenue, admitted that in the newspaper. And I thought, boy, the lawyers on this lawsuit like that quote. But, you know, all the things they didn't think of. When I first read the law and I looked at the law around the country, I felt pretty comfortable that they had gone too far and that they had really pushed the envelope in terms of constitutionally protecting the right to vote.
And Jim Talent, it didn't bother him. It had no impact on him at all in terms of how that it went too far.
Well, and let's boil it down here. Jim Talent was elected in 2004 by about 20,000 votes, a little less than 1% of the vote. There's no question that if this law remained in place, that many voters would have been turned away.
Mm. At least.
Yeah. And frankly, I don't think very many people who are elderly and have voted for years and don't have a birth certificate with a raised mark and don't have a photo ID from the state, and people that are don't have a driver's license, that are very young, who've gotten a ticket and their driver's license was taken away and didn't have a, you know.
Or college students that have a driver's license from another state but have been voting in the state of Missouri for the 4 years that they've, three, four, five, 6 years that they've been going to school.
This administration has been very, very, very hard on the most vulnerable among us, the least among us. As the New Testament says, it has been tough on the least among us. And it is the least among us that have been pulled outside of the mainstream and don't have those IDs. It was, I think, an unfortunate attempt to keep them even further outside of the mainstream by denying them the opportunity to have a say in who represents them. And I'm glad the court has taken the action it has. I'm sure that the Supreme Court will take a look at it. And I feel fairly confident that the basis on which this judge made the decision was a very sound one based on constitutional and precedent. Constitutional law and precedent.
Well, let's talk about continuing our conversation about the least among us and the most vulnerable among us. Our seniors and this so-called protection, Medicaid D protection, prescription act. how bad is this law?
Well, you know, some people have said it's gotten the grade it deserved.
Mm-hmm. The D.
Not failing, mm-hmm. because there are people who have saved some money on this program, and I want to acknowledge that, and everyone who can should access it to get whatever benefit is there, and there is some benefit. But people need to understand what happened with this legislation. Let's reverse the tape and go back to the 2004 election. There were a lot of ads put on the air by the United States Seniors Association, okay, for Jim Talent about prescription drugs. And you got the impression when you looked at the ad, well, these were a bunch of seniors that had mm-hmm. gone together and pushed because he was going to be really good. You pull back the curtain on United Seniors Association and it's pharma. The lobbying arm of the big drug companies. Mm. They wanted to make sure that Jim Talent got elected to the Senate. They needed the votes. They barely passed this thing. And what this thing did, it gave some benefit to seniors, but the cost is astronomical to our grandchildren because it built in the silos of profit for the big drug companies and for the insurance companies.
So they made money off of it.
Oh, my gosh. They're making a lot of money off of it. And essentially what has happened is there has been a moderate to small benefit to seniors, and it is big-time profitable for the big drug companies and the insurance companies. And that was because they got the numbers in Congress to do it. Now, let me tell you, this will really make people angry. The person who wrote the bill and handled the bill in the House, Representative Billy Tawson, he resigned from Congress after he got Medicare Part D passed. And I bet you can guess where he's working. He works for pharma and makes $2 million a year.
Mm.
In other words, he wrote the bill for them, and they took care of him.
Mm.
Now, that is what's wrong with Washington, D.C. Here's what's in the bill that should offend every person listening to my voice. They actually put in the legislation that it is illegal for the government to negotiate lower prices with drug companies. So when all the people hit the donut hole, which is going to the average recipient of Medicare Part D is going to hit the donut hole on September 22nd. And what that is a gap in coverage. People have been going along, getting some of their drugs for less. Many people have been helped. And then on September 22nd, the average recipient is going to be told, you've got no more coverage until you spend out-of-pocket thousands of dollars, and then the coverage will kick back in. So that donut hole is coming. And
how many people will be affected by this or impacted by this?
The vast majority, well, I don't know what percentage of mm-hmm. Medicare Part D will get to the donut hole, mm-hmm. but people who are going to get there, the average person is going to hit it here at the end of September. So that we don't need the donut hole. As my mom says, you know, what are we doing? What that Sam Hill is a Sam Hill, H-I-L, not H-E-L-L. Sam Hill is a donut hole doing in a drug plan, and it's so complicated and convoluted, and so many seniors have been confused and frightened by it, and now we have this gap in coverage. All we have to do is elect enough people who do not owe the drug companies, go out there and change Medicare Part D to allow the government to negotiate lower prices. There's almost enough votes now, just need a few more. And by the way, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that has been running ads for Senator Talent in Missouri, pharma and has really, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce won't say who's paying for those ads,
mm-hmm.
but pharma has not denied that they put the bulk of the money in there to protect the senators that took care of them on the Medicare Part D.
Let me get to a caller or two here. Ben.
Yes, I'd like to ask Auditor McCaskill about the payday loans which affect military families and the working poor. Senator Talent has proposed a 36% rate on payday loans. Does she support that or a more logical rate of, say, what the credit card companies charge of 12 to 16%? Thank you very much.
Thanks for your question, Ben.
Well, it seems like to me if we're going to there's several problems with the payday loan predatory lending bill that Senator Talent is working on right now. First of all, it's better than the current system, and I want to acknowledge that, but we could make it a lot better. First, if it's good for the military, why isn't it good for all of us?
What do you mean?
Well, if this is predatory lending,
mm-hmm.
and if this is causing problems within the military in terms of stress on the military, then what about all the people that are out there that are having to use payday loans?
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Jim Talent is pushing for a bill that would take some of the interest down just for military people?
Just for military people. Not for everybody. Just for military people.
Well, what's the sense in that?
Well, I think it was, I think there were people that wanted it passed for the military, and he pushed it and is unwilling to take on the payday loan industry in terms of protecting all of Missourians as opposed to just those serving in the military. And well, 36 is high. You know, the Federal Credit Union
obscene.
Is 18.
He's lowered it to 36?
He's lowered it to 36 for military, but still for many people, and particularly people that are, you know, at that lower rung of the ladder that are trying to figure out a way to get to keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to figure out a way to make sure they've got milk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're paying 300%, and that doesn't seem to be a problem with Senator Talent.
Well, Claire, that seems to be another one of those calculated political acts as opposed to real legislation for everybody.
I think you know, if it's good, frankly, I think it's good for the military, but it's also good for everyone. And it seems to me that we ought to be looking at predatory lending practices across the board, and not just in the military.
Maybe.
By the way, and you know, when somebody made a really good point in the debate, one of the candidates in the debate made a really good point. He's on the Armed Services Committee. Maybe we ought to pay our military more so they don't need payday loan.
There you go.
You know, this is, you know, we are really, the military families are suffering terribly because while we're anxious to stay in this war, we are not so anxious to take care of the men and women who are fighting for us and their families that are here at home suffering as a result of it.
Well, we're going to take a break. I'm talking to Claire McCaskill. This is Liz Brown. Stay with us. We'll be back.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
Sponsored by Creve Coeur Cartridge World. Save big, print happy.
If you have suffered roof damage from the recent severe weather, Phil Person Roofing is still a name you can trust. Licensed and certified for commercial and residential jobs. Phil Person Roofing offers free estimates for all work. To contact Person Roofing, call this special emergency number, 602-1047. That's 602-1047. Phil Person Roofing, 602-1047. It's another wake-up call exclusive. Does AIDS really exist?
When the researchers told you that worldwide 35 million people have been infected and 5 million have developed AIDS, you believed them. What about when they told you that minorities, primarily blacks and Hispanics, now account for some 54% of the more than 5 million cases of AIDS? You believed them, right? So what if someone told you that AIDS didn't exist? Would you believe?
Investigative journalist Liam Sheff joins Liz Brown Tuesday, September 19th at 8 a.m. for a two-hour look at whether the AIDS epidemic is real or a real hoax, exclusively on the award-winning Wake Up Call. Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
This hour's portion of the Wake Up Call is sponsored by the Committee to Elect Claire McCaskill, Sandra Querrey, Treasurer.
Thanks for
Oh, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This morning I'm having a conversation with Claire McCaskill, a candidate for the United States Senate. And before we get to some of our callers here, Claire, I want to just jump back to one of the things we were talking about, the importance of this race, the importance of changing the numbers in Washington. If we change the numbers here in the state of Missouri in terms of senators, we have one Republican senator, one Democratic senator, how does that change the way politics are done in the state of Missouri? Should we be looking at that, too, like from a red to a purple?
People need to know that Missouri has always been on the board in terms of presidential politics.
Mm-hmm.
We have always had presidential campaigns that have come to Missouri, that have campaigned in Missouri. It has made a big difference to the Democratic Party in this state. In election years that have a president on the ballot, those resources that come in. If this race does not turn out like I believe it will, and if Jim Talent were to prevail, it would send a signal to the rest of the country that we really are not as viable as we need to be in terms of the Democrats in the state. And I think there's a decent chance that we would be a flyover state mm-hmm. for presidential politics in 08.
Flyover meaning that why bother to stop because the decision's already been made there. We don't have to listen to or address any of their issues because we know what they're going to do.
Right. And what happens is that, you know, the presidential campaigns are like a chessboard. You're trying to get those electoral votes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to spend your money and your resources in states where you have a chance because you're just trying to get to that magic number of electoral votes. I think we need to do away with the Electoral College and have a popular vote. I think whoever gets the most votes ought to win
mm-hmm.
for president. But that's the way our government's set up right now. So I think people need to realize that there is ramifications down the line in terms of our competitiveness and our ability to kind of keep the other party honest in terms of our agenda and the things we want to get done for people that need empowerment and opportunity, not the people that already have all the power and already have all of, I mean, when you think about it, the priorities of Jim Talent have been tax cuts for multimillionaires as opposed to Pell Grants for college students. And it's startling if you look, the things that have been cut, Medicaid being cut, veterans benefits being cut.
During a war.
The college loans being cut. We're giving billions of dollars to big oil companies. In our money and giving away billions of dollars to people who are multimillionaires. I mean, something is really wrong with those set of priorities.
Let me get to some of our callers here. Dean.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to know where is Mrs. McCaskill at on the issue of eminent domain.
Eminent domain.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, eminent domain is something that has had a place in terms of trying to reinvigorate and revitalize particularly some of the urban core areas in our state where you need investment. You need to jumpstart investment. The problem is the definition of blight got hijacked,
mm-hmm.
And it got taken out to the suburbs for big box stores, and all of a sudden taxpayers were underwriting big box stores out in the suburbs as opposed to investing in those neighborhoods that were in distress, that did need that economic stimulus. So I think there is a place for it, but clearly the developers have gotten ahead of the game. I think some of the reforms that happened in the legislature last year are a great improvement.
What about the Supreme Court decision that came down?
The one that started all the hoo-ha, mm-hmm. people need to realize that Supreme Court decision was really deferring to the local area.
Mm-hmm.
What that Supreme Court decision really said was, we're not going to second-guess local communities. And that's not a bad thing mm-hmm. that they said that. But what we've got to do is make sure we have the tools in place in Missouri that local communities are limited by what they can do with eminent domain with a tighter definition of what blight really is. It's the abuse of eminent domain that has caused the uproar, and frankly, it should have caused the uproar. We need to protect property rights. We need to make sure that we're only using those tools, the power of the government to take people's property in places where it really is blight and really needs the economic stimulus of development.
Martha.
Good morning, Clara. Well, I'd like to know, when you get to Congress, please, can you help the African American with the small business and with the developers to help us send some money down here to help us to develop our community, especially for the African American small companies?
economic development, minority businesses, African businesses?
Well, we have. I'm very proud of the audits we've done on minority participation in this state. Frankly, we found that we were the first, even though it was required by the law, to look at how well the state had done in terms of including African-American businesses in state contracting. Our look at it said that, you know, we weren't doing what we needed to be doing, I thought it was important to shine that bright light on that issue. It's something that we need to talk about, not just at election time.
Mm-hmm.
It gives everybody a headache. That people talk about empowering small businesses, and particularly those that are African American, in election time. It's one of those things. People need to look at my record. They need to look at, you know, where I've been and what I've done, and the fact that I have a history of inclusion. I have a history of year in and year out making sure that the people that run my office reflect the makeup of our community instead of...
What does that mean? What does that mean if you have an office? You are a white woman. You have an office. You're running an office, and you have black people that are working in the office. What should we interpret from that?
Well, when I took over as state auditor, there was not one person of color in the entire office.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one, Liz. There wasn't even... I mean, there was nobody answering the phone that was black. There was no one. And so we went to work, and one of the things I've done consistently in the jobs I've had is I've reached out to find a really qualified African-American professional to put at the very top level of my office. My deputy is an African-American woman who's both a lawyer and a CPA. I went out and found her and recruited her, and she's phenomenal. She does a tremendous job running the office. And when I was prosecutor, I went out and recruited the very, very top professional to run the anti-drug program in my office. The second highest paid person in my office after me was Jim Nunley, who had his master's in public health from the University of Michigan, and his job in my office was to look at the drug problem as a public health problem, and let's get resources addressing treatment and prevention. And that was... me placing him where I did and paying him what I paid him sent a signal to everyone what a priority I'd placed on that. Looking at that in my background, I think people should be comfortable knowing that this isn't just something I do at Election Day.
And I guess one of the things that you and I have talked about off the air is when we see Jim Talent's campaign, the location of the inclusion of black folks, it's non-existent or it's demeaning. You know, having a campaign director sitting at an event handing out bumper stickers, as opposed to doing what, if you are really the campaign director, you shouldn't be handing out bumper stickers at a fair.
Well, and you know, it is, well, let's be honest. There has been what I would call window dressing mm-hmm. inclusion, but not real.
Campaign-driven window dressing.
Right. And I think, you know, it's important that it's day in, day out, and that it's substantive. And it's not just about, as I say, dressing up just on Sunday.
And we're getting callers asking for the campaign number and the headquarters address.
The campaign number is 918-VOTE. And we have a number of locations around, and because I know you have listeners all over the area, people should call 918-VOTE, and they will give them the location of the closest office to where they can go and help and volunteer. 918-VOTE, and that number will put you in touch with the campaign, and we'll get you involved, and boy, do we need you.
Very good. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. McCaskill.
Good morning.
The truth will set you free. It's always a pleasure talking to you, Ms. McCaskill. If it wasn't for Ms. Brown, Ms. McCaskill, sometimes I want the word Democrat, sometimes I don't feel as if they have forgotten what that word meant. For give you an example, Joe Lieberman, you ever heard of Twilight Zone, Ms. McCaskill?
Yeah.
Well, Joe Lieberman ended up in the Republican zone, and there you saw what Ned Lamont did to him, and I'm not a Ned Lamont supporter. Well, getting to what I'm calling you about is according to after the midterm elections, Ms. McCaskill, you watch this, President Bush is going to bring back public privatizing Social Security back on the table. Well, according to Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, they're going to have a rally. What do you mean you got to have a rally? This program has been solvent since FDR put it in place. And, Mr. McCaskill, I want to know how Jim feels about the privatizing Social Security and how you, what would you do to make them stay out of that cookie jar and make it, they claim it's not solvent, but it is solvent. And as far as I'm concerned,
okay,
Mr. McCaskill, if you are Republican, you don't get no Social Security check. If...
We gotta let her have a chance to answer. Republicans are talking about bringing back privatization of Social Security. Your response?
The best way, sometimes the best idea is stopping a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Talent co-sponsored legislation to privatize Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
I am opposed to any privatization. The last thing we need to be doing right now is giving another $1 trillion to Wall Street to risk for our seniors. We need to keep our hands off that money. We need to be more fiscally responsible. This party hasn't been, but I will fight with every fiber of my being to make sure that Social Security is there for the people who have worked hard and deserve it.
And you will be back.
I will be back.
Every week we're going to have these conversations. Claire McCaskill, thank you so much. Give out your number one more time for folks, please.
918-VOTE.
918-VOTE. Claire, thank you so much.
Thank you, Liz.
All right. Listen, folks, I'll be back to have this discussion about AIDS when we come back in the next hour. Stay with me.
This portion of the Wake Up Call has been sponsored by Committee to Elect Claire McCaskill, Santa Query Treasurer.
You stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. Your progress is healing your wound. That's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, stop resisting.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Now, he's made speeches there before, but President Bush's address today to the United Nations General Assembly is already generating a lot of buzz, and he hasn't even uttered a word. ABC's Ann Compton, traveling with the president, has a preview from New York.
From the same podium where he made his case against Saddam Hussein, President Bush takes on Iran, which has failed to meet a UN deadline for suspending its nuclear fuel enrichment program. Once Iran does that, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice tells us the U.S. will indeed negotiate.
I would meet anywhere with my counterpart at any time once Iran has suspended its enrichment and reprocessing activities.
Iran's president is expected in the chamber this morning as President Bush speaks. Ann Compton, ABC News, New York.
In case you're wondering, no, it is still not safe to eat fresh spinach. State and federal health officials will be back at farms in California and in other states today looking at irrigation, harvesting, and other practices that may have contributed to the E. coli outbreak. People in 21 states now are sick. The U.S. Capitol Police is taking a long, hard look at security after yesterday's lockdown. Here's ABC's Pam Coulter.
An armed guard now stands at the door. 20-year-old Carlos Green used to burst into the Capitol armed and apparently under the influence of drugs. Acting Police Chief Christopher McGaffin called the incident unacceptable and said a security review is already underway.
It was an unfortunate breach of our security, but it wasn't a total breach.
No one was hurt, but Green got far into the building, past the offices of top congressional leaders, before he was taken into custody, a surprising incident given the $2 billion Congress has budgeted for its security since 9/11. Pam Coulter, ABC News, Washington.
It was another bad month for home builders in August. Housing starts fell 6% to its lowest rate since April of 2003. This is ABC News.
There are infinite dynamics in business. For example, the 10 million saved is 10 million earned dynamic. Or the our month end reports actually happen by the end of the month dynamic. Or the yes, I can forecast the revenue, no, I don't own a crystal ball dynamic. How do you manage these dynamics? Microsoft Dynamics. Software solutions that are specially designed to improve your customer relationship, financial, and supply chain management. To find out more, visit Microsoft.com/Microsoft Dynamics.
You know what this Wednesday is? It's Big Wednesday at Kohl's, where there are great deals to be had on the latest fall fashions. I'm here with super stylist Sean, chatting about fall's new looks. Sean?
There's a lot of fun playing with dressier styles and fabrics.
Velvet and luxe, right?
Yes, and fitted jackets over jeans. Mix it up at home, too, with dressy pillows and tableware for every day. Easy glamour.
Easy enough at Kohl's Big Wednesday. Save 40 to 50% on fashion for you and your home. This Wednesday only, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. at Kohl's. Expect great things.
You may want to lift a cup of grog or maybe make someone walk the plank today. This is International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Here's our matey, ABC's Chuck Sievers.
My baby pirate.
Ahoy! Ahoy!
John Bauer and Mark Summers on their website, talklikeapirate.com. They say 11 years ago, during a racquetball game, they started ribbing each other in pirate talk and eventually decided to establish a holiday. They emailed the nationally syndicated humor columnist Dave Barry, who picked it up and ran with it. And the rest, they say, after a few yo-ho-hos and some diet rum, is history. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Here's another reason not to smoke if you're expecting. Researchers at Cincinnati Children's Hospital says women who do are more likely to have babies who develop ADHD later in life. Now, they say it's just a small chance, but the study is worth noting. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 4 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's weather for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Sunny this morning, partly cloudy by this afternoon, high in the mid-60s. For this evening, colder, clear, with a low in the upper 30s, even the mid-40s around the St. Louis metropolitan area. For Wednesday, sunny with a high around 70s. Wednesday evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s. And then on Thursday, partly sunny early in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day, high in the lower 70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have mostly sunny skies. Our current temperature is sitting at 53 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 53 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another quick look at your weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say the progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, talk to me, sister.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal
treatment. And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white,
white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. We are going to take a very, very interesting journey this morning, a journey that some folks may be unwilling to travel with us, because we are going to fly in the face of conventional wisdom. We're going to fly in the face of everything that you know. We're going to say some stuff that's going to cause you to say, How could that possibly be so? We're going to talk about AIDS. Okay? We're going to shake your world up about your understanding, what you've been told about AIDS. And this is the final project of one of my Wake Up Call interns, Ashante Hamilton. Good morning.
Good morning, Lise.
How are you, Ms. Hamilton?
I'm fine.
And before we get to our guests and our discussion this morning, and that is Liam Sheff. He's an independent investigative reporter from the San Francisco Bay Area. Ms. Hamilton, I want you to tell the audience about why this story. Why did you pick this story to cover?
Well, I chose this story and because, you know, I was tired of hearing the same old thing. It's almost annoying. You know, you always hear the statistics of AIDS affecting blacks and Hispanics, or black women accounting for more than 70% of AIDS cases reported. And, you know, I'm kind of curious to why it seems as though what first was a supposed gay disease now is almost like a black, you know, disease. And, you know, they call it a sex disease. They're saying that people have to be promiscuous. A lot of people who are promiscuous get this disease. But, you know, I'm sure you have people outside the black culture, heterosexual, white conservatives, that commit some of the same acts. So I really wanted that question answered. And
so are you? Am I hearing you? You're right, Ms. Hamilton, that it was irritating to all of a sudden for the community of African descent to be awarded the focus of AIDS.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, let's get to it. Let's get to that started your observation of this. How did you discover or what did you think when you came across Liam Sheff? How did you get to that?
I was shocked. You gave me the his email, or not his email, I'm sorry, his web address, and I just looked up all this information that he had, all the articles, and I was shocked. It's really enlightening, you know, and there's people who may not agree with it, or, you know, who probably going to be like, you know, that's something to think about, but I thought it was really enlightening just to look up all this information, and it just made me, you know, question, you know, does AIDS really exist?
And so, you are a college student now.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I'm in my senior year.
You're in your senior year, and you've been working on this project. Have you talked to other college kids about that?
Yes.
And have you had these conversations about this?
I have, and, you know, I've talked to several of my friends, and they're just like, yeah, right. Let me listen to this show today. And, you know, I gave him his, told him, well, look on the webpage if you don't believe me, you know. And a lot of them, once they've read his articles and just a lot of the investigations that he's done, they're like, that's something to think. I've never looked at it, you know, in that perspective. So I'm excited about it.
All right. Well, let's get to our guest, Liam Sheff. Liam, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, it's the wake-up call.
All right. All right.
It's 6 over here, but I'm doing well. It was great talking to Ashante in the last couple of weeks, so looking forward to this.
Okay, Ashante, take it away.
Okay, I want to start out with, first thing I want to start out with is giving this so-called brand name AIDS a face and a name. So I want to know who defined it and gave it this name and describe how it works.
Well, maybe you can give me a little background to how it's presented to you these days, how you hear about it, what you're told AIDS is, how it's presented to you in school, on the street.
Okay. Well, the public face is basically the public face of HIV. You know, we hear that it's a sexually transmitted virus, preys on gay men, African Americans, drug users, and, you know, basically we're at risk. And me being a young black woman, that's when I'm told that I am at risk because of that, because I fall into that category.
Hmm. Where do you end up hearing about this? I'm just curious. Where is it sort of put in your
the media? The media, I think.
And do you see posters at school? Do you
posters, classes that I've had, radio,
bus stop signs.
Exactly.
There's a bus
stop
campaign right now here in St. Louis about. There was one that there was a very stereotypical looking gay black man,
mm-hmm.
That was part of the campaign that you're all at risk type of a campaign, even though they used this what appeared to be a stereotypical gay looking man. So it comes out in the media, it comes out in the print, it comes out on radio, it comes out, it kind of almost, Liam, we're at a place where it is almost absorbed into the culture that there's this understanding that it is going to impact you more than anybody else, you being a person of African
exactly.
descent.
Yeah, and everybody's hero, Barack Obama, if I remember correctly, just... ceremonially, you know, made sure that everybody knew he was in favor of everybody getting tested.
Mm. Well, Liam, can we back up just a little bit before we get to the definitions? I asked Ashante about why she came to this story. Can you start with why you came and how you came to this issue and this story?
Sure. So my name's Liam Sheff. I'm an independent journalist, among other things. I'm a student of many things. I was raised in a family of doctors. There was always medical journals around. I grew up with no fear of medicine or of doctors, that is, asking questions about it. I spent a lot of time in the hospital as an observer, just walking around. My uncle is an AIDS researcher. My grandfather was a cancer researcher. I suppose I felt that I knew who these people were as people. They weren't perfect. They had their problems. Some of them had quite a few problems. There was no God complex there, if you take my meaning. So what they said to me didn't go necessarily. It was just their opinion, and I watched them argue about major medical results at the dinner table over the holidays. Things you think that are set in stone aren't. They're just ideas. They're popular ideas in medicine. They're the ones that are getting funded. They're the ones that somebody has a drug for, especially these days, and so people get behind it the way they get behind any... sort of advertising campaign.
And I think that that's a really good point, the whole God complex point, because a lot of people, when they hear a word coming from a medical person, unlike a lawyer, because I'm a lawyer, there's no God complex with lawyers like there is with doctors. When they hear a doctor saying something, it must be true. That's the end of it. They researched it, and it's done.
That's it, and that's the way people feel about a lot of this stuff. I, on the other hand, nope, it's an open book, and that's the way I approached all of this.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation. Liam Sheff, independent investigative reporter, joining us from the San Francisco Bay Area, and Ashante Hamilton. She is the one of the Wake Up Call interns. This is her show. This is her story. These are her questions. We'll be back with that. Stay with us.
This is George Cotton.
And I'm Phil Wilson, and we're your hosts of the show The Real Deal.
And it looks like our show is moving to drive time.
That's right. No more late evenings for us.
Tune in from 4 to 5 p.m. every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evening.
We'll keep you up on what's going on and maybe even make you angry with our weird way of looking at life, politics, and race relations in America.
The Real Deal with George and Seal every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evening.
Tune us in, and we'll take you home.
Not since the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s can I think of any bigger initiative that will empower African Americans to have control over their life than the stem cell initiative.
Dr. Michael DeBon, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Washington University School of Medicine, explains why medical experts, faith leaders, and community leaders urge a yes vote on Amendment 2, the Missouri Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative on the November state ballot.
Diabetes, sickle cell disease, hypertension. These are the type of diseases that occur in our families, in our community. Stem cell research could lead to cures for those diseases and many others. Please, please join me in voting yes on the Stem Cell Initiative to ensure that all Missourians will have equal access to future stem cell cures. Thank you.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. Sandra Oss, Treasurer.
From A to Z, the Black Business Rolodex can meet all of your shopping needs. OJ Photo Supply, a standard of quality service since 1970. 8338 Olive. Cameras, digital cameras, photo restorations. What's the best film for my camera? OJ Photo Supply can answer your questions. OJ Photo Supply, 8338 Olive, 991-5550. Don't forget, always check your decks.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Bryant.
Speechless, speechless, that's how you make me feel. Though I'm with you, I am far away, and nothing is for real. When I'm with you, I am lost for words, I don't know what to say. My head's spinning like a carousel, silently I pray. Helpless, how I feel inside. Nothing's real, but all is possible if God is on my side. When I'm with you, I'm in light, but I cannot be found. Is that the one I'm standing in? The place called hollow ground.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Speaking of speechless, we are having a discussion this morning with independent investigative reporter Liam Sheff. He's joining us from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shante Hamilton, a wake-up call intern, is driving this discussion. Shante, I'll get you back to Liam Sheff.
Okay, Liam. I had a question. What was the question that you wanted to raise about the AIDS discussion that you were not hearing anywhere else?
Well, that's a good question. That takes me to about 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had no real concept of any of it. You know, so what was I? I was a 21-year-old, what you would just call a normal white guy living in Philadelphia, which is a very racially divided city with extremes of wealth and poverty. I was not so typical. I was interested in health. I was interested in sort of personal responsibility for life in a lot of ways. I ended up studying this thing called macrobiotics, which is just a kind of vegetarianism, but not really. It's a kind of Chinese medicine approach to diet, and I studied it with a guy who was a gay man, and he was one of the first adult gay men that I ever knew. And that took a little. Well, gee, that's no, there was no problem. He was just a guy, and he was a very good friend. And I got over all of my judgments and preconceptions about who people are, and that was good. He was about 40. He had lived through. This was in the 90s, so he had lived through the AIDS era. He ran a cooking group for, I guess, about 40 guys, and these guys all tested HIV positive. This was shocking to me, just to be around these guys. I mean, AIDS was primarily then a gay disease. There was an idea that it was moving into Africa. It was definitely, in my mind, a sex disease. These guys were all fairly young. They were in their late 20s and 30s. They were very nice guys. They were all healthy. but they were all supposed to be HIV positive. Well, I just sort of watched for a while, and I watched what they did, and they focused on health and nutrition and, you know, not eating things that made them sick and all kinds of other things and diet. And I asked my friend, my mentor in this gym, was his name, one day, it took a lot of courage in a sense to say, look, you had lovers, boyfriends die of this. You had friends die of this. But everybody in this group is okay. I mean, they're bucking medical, the medical establishment. That is, they're not taking the drugs. They're not. They're just eating the way they're eating. They're doing what they're doing. Why? How do you say this to somebody? But why are you? How are you here? You know, you had boyfriends who died. How are you here? Well, he just sort of looked at me, you know, maybe with a little cleverness and just a little consideration for what I was going to be able to sort of tolerate. But he said, well, look, I think it's more of a multifactorial thing. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, look, you have this thing like any other thing. Depending on how you take care of yourself, how you live, how your immune system is, how you go, you will be more or less affected. And I said, oh. And that's about all that he said. And that was the beginning. And I just had it in my mind for the next 10 years that if you took care of yourself in a particular way, if you were careful, if you really supported your immune system, if you didn't poison yourself for the things that people eat on a normal basis in this culture, you might be all right. And I knew these guys. And by the way, it's 14 years later, and they're all alive, and they're all fine. One of them started the drugs. That would be considered a heck of a thing in the medical establishment, to have a group this large where everybody was fine, where nobody became ill, who were all supposed to be essentially dead, who weren't taking the drugs. Years later, I was sitting at a restaurant in Venice Beach, California, with a friend of mine. We were both being young and political, and I said to him, you know, I'm really worried about AIDS in Africa. I keep hearing about these numbers of AIDS in Africa. And with a mouthful of Chinese food, he just said, oh, there's no such thing as AIDS. I said, what? He said, no, it's a construct. I can't explain it very well, he said. And I said, you better explain it well. You're making me angry. I don't know what you're saying. How can you say that? And I got very angry with him. And I didn't speak to him for months.
You were that angry.
I was mad. I just didn't know what he was saying. He wasn't terribly clear about it. And I was in my late 20s then, I guess. And I made a decision, and I said, I'm really going to show him. I'm really going to show him something. And I said, in life before, if I was really angry at somebody, I just wouldn't talk to him anymore. But I said, you know, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to go prove him wrong. So I went out, and I read everything I could. And I think it's about 5 years later, and here we are. And you want me to tell you where we are?
You know, that would be very helpful. Okay, we got to why you did this. And
now you know all the background.
Okay, so tell us about where are we?
Where are we? AIDS is a construct. AIDS is a brand name. AIDS is a
brand
name.
Define construct.
You slap a couple things together, you put a roof on it, you call it a house, or you call it a boat, or you call it an airplane. It's something that's not organic. It is a brand name. Let me use that word. It's a brand name that is now put onto everything that happens. And if my friend had said this, I wouldn't have gotten so angry. It's a brand name that's put on everything that happens in certain communities. If somebody in a certain community has a cold, any kind of illness, or is having sex, the name that's going to be put on them is the brand name AIDS. That has nothing to do with what happened in the gay community in the 80s and 90s. It's a brand name that's been spread around the world. It's been done so according to, you know, legal documents, according to what essentially the doctors say. They're very clear about the fact that they will use the name AIDS to define dozens or hundreds of different totally unrelated illnesses, and they bind it together with a theory that is essentially invented. That's not even a science. It's a pseudoscience. It's junk science.
Okay, Liam, at the beginning,
Do you want any clarification on that?
Absolutely. And then we need to get to another place, but go ahead.
I'm sorry, Ashanti, do you want me to explain the junk science bit?
Please.
Okay. Ashanti confided in me that she was going to be a little nervous, but she was so good on the phone, I know. In the pre-interviews, I know that she's going to love the rest. Junk science is, or pseudoscience, means it looks like science, it acts like science, but it's not. Here's what I mean. You take anybody in one part of the world, let's say Uganda, Africa, a place that floods half of the year, where you can barely get a drink of clean water most of the time, where you're living in absolute poverty, going to the bathroom in the stream or the street behind your house,
or you're taking human waste, put it in plastic bags, and throwing it in the river.
Throwing it in the river, the river floods, stuff shows up in your garden. That's a way of life. Endemic illness, cholera, sepsis, TB, malaria, is high. The way that it was in Europe, the way that it was in America when we didn't have sewage treatment. My goodness, the world is the same everywhere when you take away the basic amenities that we're now used to. You take any illness that occurs there, you say you have diarrhea, you have AIDS. What do they have? Now they have, in their own minds, in the minds of the people around them, the sex disease, the dangerous sex disease. Do they have a sex disease? No. They have diarrhea. How do you then prove that they have a sex disease? You give them a test, and you call it an HIV test. It is not a test for a virus. It is not a test for any particular particle. You give it to them, and you say that it's accurate because you say that they're at risk for AIDS because they're black, they're poor, etc.
Circular reasoning. Liam Sheff, independent investigative reporter, joining us from the San Francisco Bay Area. I am Liz Brown. I am here with my intern and her final project, Ashanti Hamilton. We're going to have this discussion about AIDS, the AIDS debate, the AIDS issue. Is there such a thing? You need to stay with us. We'll be back with more.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. Let's take a quick look at your weather for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Sunny early this morning, partly cloudy by this afternoon, high in the mid-60s. This evening, colder, clear, with a low in the upper 30s to mid-40s around the St. Louis metropolitan area. For Wednesday, sunny with a high near 70. And Thursday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day, high in the lower 70s. Currently, we have 53 degrees under sunny skies. Stay tuned with more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. Us up next, we'll take another look at your ABC Top of the Hour news and your weather forecast. Right after the 9 o'clock hour, I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This Rolodex can meet all of your shopping needs. Do you need a lawyer? A caring lawyer who listens to you? Well, call Earlene McAllister Thomas, 454-1811, for divorce, child support, child custody, criminal defense, accident, workers' comp, name change, or traffic case. Call Earlene Thomas. She's an excellent trial attorney and an aggressive advocate. 454-1811. Don't forget, always check your decks.
Hello, I'm John Womack. I have a new show on WGNU called On the Table. Some of the things we'll talk about will be restaurants, food and wine trends, recipes, but really, we're just trying to help you experience great food and wine, whether you're at home or out on the town. So if you love great food and wine, you'll love On the Table. Be listening every Tuesday at noon here on WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. don't leave home without it.
Like a flower waiting to bloom, like a light bulb in a dark room, I'm just sitting here waiting for you to come on home and turn me on.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My discussion this morning is with independent investigative reporter Liam Sheff, who is joining us from the San Francisco Bay Area. We're discussing AIDS and is it really what they said that it is? And my sitting here in the studio with me is Wake Up Call intern Ashante Hamilton, and she's driving this conversation. Ashante, let me kick it back to you.
Okay, Liam, what I'm hearing you're saying is that HIV test doesn't test for HIV. Does it have anything to do with Robert Gallo? Because we're told that HIV, you go to a clinic, you take the test, it tells you whether it's, you know, whether you're positive or negative. How do you get to a point where you can say that HIV test doesn't test for HIV? And I want to direct your attention back to an article that you wrote, the most controversial story you've never heard. Can you kind of go over that with us?
Okay. So the question is, why do I say that there's no such thing as an HIV test? Because I do say that.
Right.
And if I can just interrupt just for a second, that's an astounding statement. That is an astounding statement because everywhere we go, we are told that the way that you find out if you have AIDS is that you have to take this test. And this test tests for the virus, and it's a conclusive test. How do we possibly get to a place where there is no such thing as an HIV test doesn't test for AIDS?
Well, you just said it. An HIV test doesn't test for AIDS. AIDS is a clinical. Okay, I'm going to look at the inside of the test. I'm looking at it right now. It's the Abbott Laboratories HIV test insert. It says limitations of the procedure. AIDS and AIDS-related conditions are clinical syndromes, and their diagnosis can only be established clinically. EIA, that's the test, ELISA testing, that's what they call it. It's an enzyme test, cannot be used to diagnose AIDS, even if the recommended investigation of reactive specimens suggests that the antibodies to HIV are present. Now, you're a lawyer, so you're going to start to hear language you're used to, suggests, maybe, probable, you know, possible. So they just said that AIDS.
Here's what I'd like for you to do, Liam, because you've read this a lot, you've seen this a lot. Can you slow that down and go back over that again with a little bit of slowness to that?
I'm going to do that one, and okay. I'm going to do this one. These are the two things I'm going to read. You can read these. These are the test inserts. They accompany the actual tests. You can find them at Abbott Laboratories or some of the laboratories that make them, or we'll give some web addresses at the end of the show.
Very
the
good.
Last thing that I'm going to read on this test is a line in the test that says, at present, there is no recognized standard for establishing the presence or absence of antibodies to HIV in human blood.
No recognized standard?
Yeah. At present, there is no I'm reading directly from the Abbott Laboratories 2006 test insert. At present, there is no recognized standard for establishing the presence or absence of antibodies to HIV-1 or HIV-2 in human blood. There's no standard for recognizing. So this test doesn't test for what it says it does. There's no standard for it. Well, let me go back and read the other line. AIDS and AIDS-related conditions are clinical syndromes, and their diagnosis can only be established clinically. HIV testing, ELISA testing, cannot be used to diagnose AIDS, even if the recommended investigation of reactive specimens, there's a term I want you to hold on to, reactive specimens, suggests that the antibodies to HIV are present. They just said two things. They said that this test isn't an HIV test. They said there's no standard for determining what we mean when we say HIV positive. Well, you can throw the test out the window. They then say that AIDS and AIDS-related conditions are clinical syndromes. Well, that's true. AIDS is a clinical syndrome. That means that you present with certain clinical factors. Now, those factors are anything that occurs in certain groups of people. When you read these test inserts in the medical literature on testing carefully and thoroughly, you realize that there are two people speaking. There's the public voice that says this is an HIV test at the top. Then there's the voice at the back of the test that says this test has no standard. It cannot possibly tell you if you're going to have this, if you have AIDS. In the same test packet, it says that the proteins in the test, so this test is a test made out of synthetic proteins. The proteins are grown in bacteria. They're not human proteins. They're not real proteins. They're not viral proteins. I mean, they're proteins. They're grown in bacteria. They're not viral proteins. The clinician mixes some of your blood with this test. If there's a reaction, if some of the proteins, the synthetic proteins, grab on to some of the antibodies in your blood, you have a reaction. The things that are known to make the kinds of proteins that grab are almost anything that your body produces. There's a list of stuff in the medical literature that's just never ending that makes these things come up reactive. Pregnancy, drug use, lymphoma. Let me read some from the medical literature. Alcoholic liver disorder. Arthritis. I'm sorry. Anyway, you get the idea. All of these things come up, make the test come up positive.
So there's
any number of things.
So these created proteins grab onto things in your blood that indicate that you have cancer or that you have that you're pregnant.
That you're pregnant. That you're having a normal antibody reaction to just about anything. So you have this reaction between your protein and your blood protein and the protein in the test, and they say then you have a reaction. There's no such thing as positive and negative. There's a reaction. And they read the reaction.
But they say test positive.
Right. And they get there. So that's why I say this is a pseudoscience, because this is obviously already garbage. They say there's no standard. They admit in the medical literature and in this package insert that pregnancy, that drug use, that other things make the thing come up reactive.
Well, what do they mean when they say it can only be established clinically?
They mean that if they want to tell you that you have AIDS, they'll tell you you have AIDS. You walk into the doctor's office or you don't walk into the doctor's office, and they say clinically. That means they look at you in a clinic. They look at what's going on with you. And they say, aha, you're a drug user, you're a black woman in your 20s, your 30s, you're a gay man in your 40s. You're at high risk for AIDS. And it's that concept right there. When they determine that you are at high risk, they suddenly have their standard for this test. This test has one standard. The standard is an assumption. The standard is the assumption that the test is valid for you. It's junk science. It's pseudoscience. They want to tell certain people that they have a sex disease. It's going to kill them within a certain period of time. They have no such thing. You look at the people in Africa who are starving to death on a regular basis, who have water-borne illness all the time. You then go to them and you say, aha, we want to tell you that you have this thing. I should backtrack to 1985. Everybody says, well, this isn't possible. Now AIDS in the gay community was a real phenomenon. There was a real spike in illness, and that came out of a particular lifestyle. And Ashanti was pointing me to that earlier when she asked about the piece called The Most Controversial Story You've Never Heard. Robert Gallo, early AIDS was, a complex, again, I'm going to use the word multifactorial. There were many factors influencing, not just one, going on in the gay community. The gay community is a very specific community in America. In the 60s, it was not a community. In the 70s, it barely was. It was a group of people pushed to the margins of society, not allowed into society, forced essentially to live in little gay ghettos in a couple cities in America. And within a number of city blocks, you had your entire life where you could be who you are. Behaviors got stretched to the breaking point. Drugs were taken in massive excess regularly. This was called the fast lane lifestyle. Sex was had in massive quantities with many anonymous partners. STD rates were incredibly high. Drugs were taken for partying and prophylactically. People were popping hard antibiotics to just you know, before they had sex, because they expected that they were going to have the clap or, you know, something that they didn't want. 10 years of this, and a lot of guys were sick. A lot of guys were worn out. They had no more intestines. They had no more stomach linings left for all the stuff they were doing. They got sick. They went into the hospital. They were, it depends on where they were, but sometimes they were treated like pariah, like, you know, you have some sort of gay plague and we don't want to touch you. When they weren't, they were still given the standard medical care. And in the West, we're good at one thing. We're good at war medicine. We're good at emergency medicine. If you walked in, if you come in from a car accident, you don't want to be anywhere but here. If you want to treat your diet or make sure you live a long time, you want to be everywhere but here in terms of talking to a doctor. Because what we know how to do is to do medicine the way we do war. We want to drug you and drug you mercilessly. We want to bomb you with drugs. So these guys walk in from 10 years of this lifestyle or longer of the drug. I don't mean gay lifestyle. I want people to be clear. I mean hard drugs, hard partying. They walk in, they're beat up, they're tired. They're given chemotherapy, cancer chemotherapy. They're injected with fungicides like pentamidine. Their limbs blacken, they get sick, they die in large numbers. A fear goes through the community. Everybody's nervous. A lot of people are sick. By the way, I don't claim to have all of the answers for why people got sick in the early 80s. There's nobody I've ever talked to who said, once they were being very clear and honest, that it was just one thing, that it was clearly sex. There were people who had a lot of sex who didn't get sick. There were people who used a ton of drugs who did get sick. It seems to go on and on in both ways. But
okay, we have to go to break right now, yeah. Liam. And when we come back, can we have a further discussion about the fact that, what the Center for Disease Control and Prevention has said about AIDS to get to that it's not a single type of disease? Can we have that discussion when we come back to
sure.
make it clear? This is Liz Brown. We're talking to an independent investigative reporter joining us from the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm here with Ashante Hamilton, the wake-up call, intern. This is her story. We will be back. We'll get to some of your questions and comments as well. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen letting you know my show will be on every Thursday from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Yeah, I'll make you think. You may find yourself saying, oh my God, it burns, it burns. It only hurt for a minute. See you then.
Everything the engineer would move. One day the engineer wanted a bite to eat. He left the monkey sitting on the...
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Washington. Military analysts indicate that the planning for an attack against Iran over its nuclear capabilities could involve B-2 stealth bombers and perhaps F-117 stealth fighters. There are about 24 sites that could be targeted in Iran that are believed to be suspected nuclear production facilities. Plans for such action have been in place since the summer of 2005 and would be coordinated by Strategic Command Headquarters at Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska. Such an attack could be on the scale of the shock and awe stage of the initial invasion of Iraq in 2003. Another component of this proposal is coordinated actions by Israel and other NATO coalition partners. The leadership in Tehran has already indicated if such a strike against them takes place, they will respond with ballistic missile strikes against Israel and American military facilities in Iraq, Afghanistan, and throughout the Persian Gulf region. One surprise in this whole game is the alliance that Turkey has formed with Israel. It has allowed Israeli special forces to be deployed near the border with Iran and Syria. All of these moves are part of a defense doctrine called Concept Plan 8022, which is a military strike plan for the use of bombers and submarines against perceived threats to American security anywhere in the world. Con Plan 8022 also has allowances for the use of nuclear weapons. There are versions of nuclear weapons in the American arsenal that have been reclassified as being a form of bunker buster bomb and have now been certified as safe to use because the explosion takes place under the surface of the Earth. The unknown in this scenario is how extensively a ground war could escalate. This is your wake-up call global news update.
A message from George Lopez.
What's the one place you can take the whole family where there's something for everyone to enjoy? It's your public library.
Libraries are places for information, education, and entertainment for people of all ages. And all it takes is a library card. The smartest card you own. Get it, use it, at your library.
September is Library Card Sign-Up Month. Pick up your card today. A message from the American Library Association's Campaign for America's Libraries.
Hi, I'm Donna Gamash.
And I'm Carrie Silverstock.
Join us every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. for Make It Happen Stories on Women Inspiring Women.
Right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. This morning we are talking to independent investigative reporter Liam Sheff. He's joining us from the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm also joined in the studio with one of the wake-up call interns, Ashante Hamilton. We're discussing the AIDS debate, the most controversial story that you've never heard. Liam, welcome back. And Ashante, you want me to shoot it to you? We'll come back to me. Can we get to the place, Liam, about the whole concept of that AIDS is not a single disease?
Sure. I mean, AIDS is a group sort of umbrella diagnosis. Now, let me be clear. To me, it's a number of things. It's a pseudoscience. It's a semi-eugenic campaign. It's a way that we brand name people in different parts of the world with a single disease name instead of looking at everything that they do have, which is essentially lack of infrastructure and poverty. And we do it in such a way so that we can feel great pity for them, so that we can interfere with their sex lives, so that we can worry about how many children they have. This historically is exactly what an established power does with a colonial power, what the West has done with Africa, what Europe did with America. It is the same old story, and you can find it in the history books. Anything that occurs in these areas. Now, we were talking about the tests before, and I was saying that the test, it says in the test material that there's no standard for determining what's truly positive or negative or what the tests mean. And I said that the test interpretation rests on the predetermination, the prejudgment of who you're giving the test to. And I'm going to read this to you from the Abbott Laboratories test. And this will maybe tell you what you need to know. This is what they call an HIV test. This is the 2006 version, the same as all the others. A specimen found, that's a blood sample, found to be initially reactive by this Abbott Laboratories test, should be retested in duplicate, tested again, using a sample from the original source. All right, so you have one test, you're going to do it again. Why? Reactivity in either or both of these duplicate tests, i.e. repeatedly reactive, is highly predictive of the presence of HIV or HIV-2 antibodies in people. And here's the clincher. I'm going to read all this again. At increased risk for HIV infection. Hold on a second. Wait. It didn't say that the test tells you that you're infected. It says that it's highly predictive.
Well, Liam, let me stop you just for a second. When you take a test for tuberculosis, when you take a test for pregnancy, when you take these types of medical tests, do any of them say, do they all use the word highly predictive, or do they use other words saying that this is determinative?
No, all of these tests more or less run the same. For example, the hepatitis C test. This is another antibody test that asks you to to look at who you're testing. Your point is well taken. These tests aren't perfect anywhere in any field.
So do they use any different language than the language that you're saying right now?
Well, sometimes it depends on what kind of test that they're doing. With things like chickenpox, you know, varicella, you can do an antibody test, or you can do a different kind of test, and it will not find the virus. But the line that they don't have is that there's no standard for determining what the test means.
Mm.
That's the thing that separates HIV. That standard means one thing. It means that there's a pure, isolated, single virus that they are relating the test to. When they say there's no standard for this, and by the way, this is repeated over and over again in the medical literature, 1986, Journal of the American Medical Association, no established standard exists for identifying HTLV-3, which is what they used to call HIV, infection in asymptomatic people. In 1987, New England Journal of Medicine, meaning of positive tests will depend on the false positive rate. Because we lack a gold standard, we do not know what that rate is now. 1996, Journal of the American Medical Association, the diagnosis of HIV infection in infants is particularly difficult because there is no reference or gold standard test that determines unequivocally the true infection status of the patient. 1997, Abbott Laboratories, at present there is no recognized standard for establishing the presence or absence of HIV antibody in human blood. In 2000, the journal AIDS reports that in a study, either 2.9% or 12.3% of women in the study were positive, either 3 or 12.5%, depending on the test used. But since there is no established gold standard, it's unclear which of these two proportions is the best estimate of the real prevalence rate. The line I was reading says, now, there's no standard. That means the test, you can just throw it out. It's garbage. I mean, they say that, so I'll say that. They say that the test is highly predictive of the presence of an antibody. But hold on a second. Not just in anybody. In people at increased risk for AIDS, for HIV infection. You give the test to people who you already determine have the thing that you're looking for. You then say the test is accurate for those people. For the people who you say it's not accurate for, you don't enforce that line. For example, in a group of, and here's a quote from the AIDS literature. This is a magazine called AIDS Alert from March 1998. In a group of 1,000 white, affluent suburban housewives, positive results will be false. This is, I'll read you the whole quote later, but they're clear that if you test certain people who you assume are at risk for the sex disease, that you then associate with what happened in the gay community, which was clearly complex, clearly multifactorial, clearly had no single cause, has no single treatment, you then associate it with that, though, and you bind it to that, and you tie a red ribbon around it, and you send it to Africa. And how do you
Wait a minute. Before we get to Africa, before we get there, are you saying that when you go out and test 1,000 white women in suburbia, and they're going to get the same types of readings that everybody else gets because it's indicative of herpes, salmonella, diarrhea, fever, all of that, pelvic cancer, so they will get the same types of positive results, but the conclusions will be different because they are not in a risk group?
That's exactly correct. They'll get results, and the results are neither positive nor negative. It's just a reaction. It's a protein reaction. Depending on the strength of the reaction, you're considered either a stronger or a weaker reaction. Now, there are a couple ways this goes around in a circle. If you have a strong reaction, you're considered to be likely positive. They'll test you again.
But then they determine what your group is.
What your group is. That's why it's a pseudoscience, because you can throw the testing out the window, but they make sure they march through their paces. By the way, people out there who know about this will be fuming at this point, because I haven't mentioned what they consider the true virologic test. And these are the what they call the viral load test. But I already read the insert for one of those, and I was reading from the Journal of the American Medical Association saying that you couldn't diagnose infants with even these PCR tests, they called viral load tests, because there's no gold standard. Even the tests that they say are genetic or virologic, they're not. They come up positive for people who have worms. When you treat the worms, the tests are no longer strongly reactive, and they don't consider them positive anymore. I'm going to read you this whole quote.
Okay, well, before you do that, we have a few people on the line that want to ask some questions. Let's get to a couple of their questions before we end this hour. Let me do that. Mary, you have a question. Mary?
Yes,
you have a question for our guest.
Liz, you know, I heard on the radio, full medical science, got up and asked the question, where did AIDS come from? And they all say the laboratory. It was built up in the laboratory to get to a certain type of people to tell them they was helping us, and it's pure genocide.
All right, thank you for that. And hold on to that thought. Theo?
Yeah, first of all, there cannot be a test for HIV when no one has ever isolated the virus. And the next thing, Kerry Mullis said, you can't take his test, the PCR test, and use it the way they're doing. So I think it's a problem. And in Africa, they use the Banwi method. That's just basically not doing any kind of blood test, but basically asking someone if they're having certain symptoms and then just making a determination that they have HIV. Anyone takes a HIV test is either ignorant or a damn fool.
All right, then. We're going to continue this conversation.
Wow.
We're going to continue this conversation talking with Liam Sheff, independent investigative reporter. Ashante, you want to take us out here? Thank us for listening, and we'll be back.
Thank you for listening.
Talk to you in a minute.
All right, we'll be back. Stay with us.
Hearing revolution in the air, younger brothers, stop resisting.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. He has not uttered a word, not a single one, but President Bush's speech to the United Nations General Assembly later this morning is already generating a lot of buzz. Here's ABC's Ann Compton.
From the same green marble podium where he once rallied world opinion against Saddam Hussein, President Bush intends to challenge Iran as a destabilizing force. His theme, that the spread of democracy will reduce regional tensions. President Bush does not intend to cross paths with the Iranian President Ahmadinejad, who is expected to be in the General Assembly chamber for the American's address. Ann Compton, ABC News, with the President in New York.
Police in Pittsburgh have a break in the shootings of five Duquesne University basketball players. Court documents show it's a woman who allegedly sneaked some armed men into a school dance. She is now under arrest on weapons-related charges. It was an accident. Now officials at Methodist Hospital in Indianapolis are apologizing for mistakenly giving several infants an adult-sized dose of blood thinner. Two died, four are in critical condition.
The only thing we can say is that we're sorry and that we're committed to making the hospital as safe as possible. We'll learn from this and make the system even more foolproof.
Hospital CEO Sam Old. Keep your fingers crossed. That's what the pilot of the space shuttle Atlantis is asking his family in Philadelphia. The crew is on its way home. The shuttle expected to land tomorrow. Former New Jersey Governor Jim McGreevy's book, The Confession, goes on sale today. The nation's first openly gay governor came out in his resignation speech in 2004. He's on today's Oprah Winfrey Show.
You're not only saying it to the woman you love, you're saying it to yourself. I mean, when you're in the closet, yeah. Part of the hell of being in the closet is you're denying your own existence.
McGreevy admitted to having extramarital affairs and putting a sexual partner on the state payroll. ABC News Money Scope, the Dow is down 20 points in early going, and the NASDAQ is off too. This is ABC News.
There are infinite dynamics in business. For example, the 10 million saved is 10 million earned dynamic. Or the our month end reports actually happen by the end of the month dynamic. Or the yes, I can forecast the revenue, no, I don't own a crystal ball dynamic. How do you manage these dynamics? Microsoft Dynamics. Software solutions that are specially designed to improve your customer relationship, financial, and supply chain management. To find out more, visit Microsoft.com/Microsoft Dynamics.
You know what this Wednesday is? It's Big Wednesday at Kohl's, where there are great deals to be had on the latest fall fashions. I'm here with super stylist Sean, chatting about fall's new looks. Sean?
There's a lot of fun playing with dressier styles and fabrics.
Velvet and luxe, right?
Yes, and fitted jackets over jeans. Mix it up at home, too, with dressy pillows and tableware for every day. Easy glamour.
Easy enough at Kohl's Big Wednesday. Save 40 to 50% on fashion for you and your home. This Wednesday only, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. at Kohl's. Expect great things.
A British TV comedy which developed a big American following is getting a new lease on life. Here's ABC's Gil Fox.
The hotel that inspired the British comedy series Fawlty Towers, the Gleneagles Hotel in Torquay in western England, is reopening after a makeover.
Fawlty's the name, Mr. Fawlty.
Basil Fawlty, John Cleese, stayed there with the Monty Python cast and had a simply awful time.
You are a hideous orangutan. I'm so sorry, he's from Barcelona.
The place was to be torn down recently and luxury apartments built on the site, but the hotel prevailed. It's been rebuilt and will reopen with Basil Fawlty's wife, Sybil, unveiling a plaque in the hotel.
I call her Sib, right? For Sybil.
Gil Fox, ABC News.
He talks and he laughs, so what's so new about this Elmo? Well, now he slaps his knee and he falls to the floor, pounding his arm. TMX elbow, Elmo, not elbow, made his debut on ABC's Good Morning America this morning, and he goes on sale today, $39.99. And if you're wondering, yes, the X stands for extreme. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 4 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's weather for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Sunny this morning, becoming partly cloudy throughout the day. High in the mid-60s this evening. Colder, clear, low in the upper 30s to mid-40s around the St. Louis metropolitan area. For Wednesday, sunny, high around 70. And Thursday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. High in the lower 70s. Currently, we have 53 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your ABC News and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, talk to me, sister.
But the hard truth is that not everyone.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. This morning we are having a discussion about AIDS, AIDS testing, AIDS drugs, the misinformation, the calculated storytelling about AIDS. And we're having this discussion with independent investigative reporter Liam Sheff. He's joining us from the San Francisco Bay Area. In the studio with me, because this is her project, is Ashante Hamilton, one of the Wake Up Call interns. This is her end of the year project with me. And Ashante, welcome back.
Thank you.
And I know that you have another question for Liam Sheff, so
yes,
let's get
I do.
To that.
I kind of raised a question to me. If it's not a single disease, and it can't be isolated, the tests are inaccurate, which you've already said that they base it off of a risk group, and me being a young African-American female, I'm already a part of that risk group. Who benefits from this lie about AIDS?
Who benefits from the lie? Well, you'd have to go back to, I guess, 1985. In 1985, the World Health Organization, which is sort of an outreach group of various Western interests, had a meeting, and a caller at the end of last hour said the Bangui definition. Bangui is the capital of the Central African Republic. In 1985, there was a meeting there presided over by a United States CDC, that Center for Disease Control official, and his name's Joseph McCormick. He wrote about it in his book called Level 4 Virus Hunters in the CDC, and he collected a meeting in Africa in 1985, remember, just a year or so after the idea that there was a gay sex disease running through the gay populations in the United States, and said, and I quote, "If I could get everyone in the WHO, World Health Organization, meeting in Bangui to agree on a single, simple definition of what an AIDS case was in Africa, then, imperfect as the definition might be, we could actually start counting the cases." Counting the cases of what? How would you diagnose imperfectly cases of AIDS in Africa? You would do so, as the previous caller said, by looking at symptoms, and just like the test material said, by looking at clinical presentation. You end up looking at diarrhea and fever and weight loss and the rest. So you end up looking at this kind of stuff and deciding that this is now how you're going to tell people in Africa that they have the same sex disease that people in the gay community had, that wasn't really a sex disease in the gay community. It was a multifactorial, very complex series of illnesses coupled with standard medical care in this country, which is to drug people mercilessly and nearly to death or to death. So then you have to ask the question, how rare is it to have diarrhea in Africa? Well, it's not rare, it's common. How rare is it to die of famine and malnutrition in Africa? Well, it's very common. How long has it been common? It's been common forever. If you look at the work of historians, of Thomas Malthus, from the 18th century, Englishman from the 18th century, an explorer called Mungo Park from Scotland. He goes to Africa and he says that a great number of people are dying all the time, that there are fevers that kill people in 3 days, that the sight of Africa for somebody who's never been there is absolutely shocking and they don't know what to make of it. It's the same country as the same continent as it ever was. It's a continent of extremes. It's a continent of exploitation. It is a continent that is not necessarily, conducive to a very, very high quality of life for a lot of people. So who benefits from telling everybody that they have a particular sex disease? Well, we're a country that I call, we have a semi-morality. We're semi-Judeo-Christian, but really our religion is capitalism. We don't do anything unless we can make money from it, and we're very proud of this, and in some ways it's, as I think it was Churchill who said, it was the worst system of government except for every other, but we don't do anything unless we can make money from it. So why would you go to a country and look at people and say, you have a sex disease and you're going to die of it, and it's a sex disease, by the way, not the burning hole of hunger in your stomach and not the malaria or the dysentery that you have from having no clean water. It's a sex disease. Why would we say this? Well, we can sell drugs, and we do sell drugs, and we sell a lot of drugs. And we also get to put factories in foreign markets. We get to override national concerns of sovereignty. We did this. We're doing the same thing with this bird flu thing, which is essentially the same kind of construct. You look at people who have no clean water in Southeast Asia, who are agrarian and rural, and you then tell everybody in the world that we have to be terrified that there's some flu that's going to kill everybody, unless we control their environment, not our environment, their environment, unless we can put the drug factories in their place, unless we can control their agriculture. And we're doing the same, this is what we're doing with these sort of, this is the big, this is the new colonialism, it's the new crusade. And we get into it, Ashanti and Liz, I'd just like to jump into it quickly, and we get into it from my point of view because of something that happened in history. We used to rely on the church to tell us sort of how to think and what to do, and it was the arbiter of truth and information. And the church did a lot of things that bothered a lot of people, so they rebelled from the church, and they made an assumption. This was in the 1800s. There was the French Enlightenment. There were a number of movements around this. And they said things like God is dead and the Bible is a meaningless old book. So people got rid of ideas of, that this old thing means anything. And I think they thought that all the problems that occurred historically occurred because of religion. So they said, we'll now rely on science. So we now rely on science for, essentially, for morality. And Liz, you said when we started that it was going to this conversation was going to bother people. The reason it bothers people isn't because they're nervous. I mean, if you read what I read in the HIV test, that it says that there's no standard. It says that it comes up positive for pregnancy, liver disease, alcoholic liver disease, arthritis, tuberculosis, etc. You go, I don't want to take that test. That's not the thing that makes people nervous. The thing that makes people nervous is this is actually immoral. It's an ethical discussion, and the ethic that we're talking about is the constrainment, the restraining of sexuality in certain groups. We used to do this with the Bible. We used to do this with Leviticus and the Ten Commandments, and we used to go to certain groups. I mean, America was conquered based on the idea from the Pope in Rome and from the Church of England that these people were all ingrates, or what do you call them when they're not worshiping in the Christian way, and they need to be brought into the fold so they're no longer against what we know to be the real truth. But we've gotten rid of that, and we need a new way to do it. And we now dress it up in science, but it's a pseudo-science. So who benefits from it? The drug companies benefit from it, but you notice that the American public, it goes in two directions with this AIDS conversation. They either do not care, and this is the majority of the American population, do not care because it's not real. It doesn't affect them. You don't find wealthy people suddenly, well, that's the joke about AIDS, of course. You're supposed to not be sick. You're supposed to die in like 20 years after you test or whatever. So that's that. But you don't find them even worrying about getting tested. Who do we worry about? We worry the black community, we worry the Hispanic community, worry the gay community about getting tested. Why do we do that? It seems like we're worried about the sexual practices of certain people. Who benefits? I think the culture at large is enacting the same old judgments about sex and race and sexuality that it always has, but it finds a way to do it now by cloaking it in pseudoscience, because the left, and this is really who drives this, the very, very strong radical left drives this, and they bind themselves to the pseudoscience, and they call you a denialist, which is something you call people who deny that the Holocaust existed. They call you a denialist if you say what I'm saying, if you read from the test literature.
But don't we have denouncements coming from both the left and the right?
The right doesn't really care so much because, either they're happy about AIDS because they get to make money from selling drugs, or they just consider it a gay sex disease and they don't want to hear about it in school and they don't want everybody to work, they just want it to be left in their mind where it is. They have a kind of a judgmental attitude about it that misses a lot of the details, but actually, they have a better skepticism about it than the left.
We're going to continue this conversation. I'm talking to Liam Sheff, independent investigative researcher, joining us from the San Francisco Bay Area. We're talking about AIDS, HIV, and also in the studio with me is Wake Up Call intern Ashanti Hamilton. We will be back with our discussion, and to get to some of your calls, questions, and comments, stay with us.
The Gateway Westcast Myriad Society will present a judge show at the Missouri Botanical Garden in the Beaumont Room on Saturday and Sunday from 9 to 5. Horticultural and artistic entries are open to the public. There will also be a plant sale with many varieties of gesneriads available. For details, call 636-789-3604 or email patspets@jcn1.com. Something for you from WGNU.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
Sponsored by Creevcor Cartridge World. Say big, print happy.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Been around the whole world, still ain't seen nothing like my neighborhood. And of all of the fancy satin and silk, my white cotton feels so good. Search high and low for a place where I can lay my burdens down. Ain't nothing in the whole wide world like the peace that I have found. The little things, the joy they bring.
Welcome back, welcome back. This is the Wake Up Call. I'm Ashanti Hamilton, intern for Liz Brown, and we're talking with Liam Schaff about this brand name AIDS. Liam, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, we talked about the fact that the tests are inaccurate. So if the tests don't work, are we to expect that the drugs won't work either? Let's talk about the drugs, the AZT and Nevirapine.
Oh, right. So the drugs are top-of-the-line garbage.
Top-of-the-line garbage.
Expensive garbage, stuff that they've kept around for 20 years at this point, stuff they keep putting through the paces even though they're scads and piles of literature on it that essentially say, don't give this stuff to living things, don't give it to children, don't give it to adults. The drugs used for AIDS... And you know, right before the break, we were talking about history, and the fact that AIDS is essentially, to my mind, a reiteration of everything that's come before in the way that we manage each other, and that the upper classes manage what we consider lower classes in the world. In the era of the church, people who were considered infidels would have been conquered, would have been made slaves anywhere in the world. Would have been put in bondage, would have been killed, or would have been, assimilated. Possibly would have been tortured under the various inquisitions. Now we don't fit, well, we still physically torture the infidel, I guess. And the way that we do it is that we get the people who, we get in the risk group, we say you're in the risk group, we then decide that you're at risk for AIDS, we then decide that we can give you a test because, of course, if we say you're at risk, says the Pope in Rome, says the NIH, then you're at risk. We then give you the test that we say is valid because you're at risk. And then what do? We say you're going to die because there's a single thing, and we don't have any standard for finding it, but there's a single thing in you, and we know it's there, trust us. It's going to make you sick, and it's going to whittle away at you, and there's nothing you can do about it except to take these drugs. this is your salvation. And that's really the attitude. This is your salvation. So when you criticize the drugs, you run into the people who are religious about this, and they'll scream at you for saying...
Well, criticizing God.
You know, you're essentially criticizing the Pope in Rome. How dare you? really what I'm saying is I'm reading about the drugs, and the drugs are incredibly poisonous, and they say things on the warning labels like, this drug will kill you if you take it, this drug has high fatality associated with it, this drug causes your skin to break off in large chunks, this is nevirapine, this drug suppresses your bone marrow and causes deformations in children in utero and death in the mothers, this is a drug called AZT. And all of the drugs descend from these two types of drugs. There's a third class called protease inhibitors, which was brought into the fold later, which also offers its string of body-deforming properties and characteristics. And the way that it does this is to alter the genetic material or the protein assemblage of your cells. So it really gets deep down into the center of everything, and it either stops your cells from producing new healthy cells. It actually stops your DNA from duplicating. This is the AZT type of drug. Or it interferes with the transcription of genetic elements, which is the nevirapine type of drug. Or it interferes with the assembling of proteins, which are the protease inhibitors. So you stop your body from doing what it needs to survive. Lo and behold, you don't do very well. And again, the effects of these drugs, the primary effects, are things like liver failure and bone, blood marrow, anemia, that's the inability to produce blood. So a logical person would say, golly, you say that somebody's sick, you then give them a drug that stops their body from producing healthy blood cells, and they die. What's wrong with this picture? Well, everything's wrong with the picture. That's my short roundup of the drugs. People will defend the drugs. They'll say that these drugs stopped people in the gay community from dying. I will tell you that I will never take a drug from somebody's hand or mouth. If you want to take something, if you feel comfortable taking it, do it. I'm not an activist for this. If I ever was, I'm not anymore. I don't think it's a winnable cause. I'm just interested in the history and the information at this point. The reason I got into the story primarily, well, besides what I told you about my early interest, was what was happening in New York in a place called Incarnation Children's Center, which is an orphanage that was set up really as a safety net to grab the children that were being left at hospitals from crack addict mothers in Harlem and Washington Heights. Well, lo and behold, the beneficent Church of AIDS finds this going on, decides that these aren't just crack babies, they're now AIDS babies. It's easy enough to do. You just tell people that they're AIDS babies, and everybody believes you. You can institute some sort of HIV testing, which isn't true, which doesn't exist, to, you know, encourage people to stop thinking and encourage the left to make the association. We support gay rights, therefore we support, you know, HIV testing. We support, you know, what is it, ethnic diversity. Therefore, we're worried about black women not being tested. And you get this going on. And what happened at Incarnation Children's Center was an abomination. It was an absolute destruction of human rights and of human lives. These children were put into clinical trials. They were put into trials where they could not refuse these drugs in very high doses, in incredible combinations, 6, 7, 8 drugs at a time. And lo and behold, the children, these little abandoned babies of crack addicts, grew up or died addicted, no longer addicted to crack, but constantly addicted by force feeding to these very poisonous drugs. And as you know, the last time I was on your show, we had Mimi Pasquale, who worked there, and she came on and admitted that they walked around all night long, plying the mouths of these kids open and pushing the drugs into the mouths. And yes, the children had diarrhea constantly from the drugs, and yes, they threw up constantly from the drugs. And yes, kids quit the drugs when they could and tried not to take them when they could and would feel better very often when they didn't, but that's what we had to do, said Mimi. And you can read that story. It's called Inside Incarnation.
And let me get to some of our callers here because we have lots of people on the line that want to ask some questions. Craig, do you have a question for our guest, Liam Sheff?
Yes, Liam, how you doing?
Outstanding.
And hi to your guest and your intern.
Hello.
Hi. What I wanted to ask was, I remember before the disease got targeted right at the black community, there was a, I guess you would call it a rumor going around saying that the disease came from green monkeys, and then also another rumor about the disease originated in Haiti. And I was just wondering, was that purely racism, or was anything else connected with that? And also one other thing, Liz, why is it that with George Bush's fight against AIDS in Africa, he demands that no condoms be distributed if, you know, it's a sexually transmitted disease?
Thanks for your questions and comments.
Well, to jump to the idea of sexually transmitted, if you look at the medical literature, you can look at the various studies that talk about sexual transmission. Now, remember, there's no test that determines infection with any particular element. People who are sick anywhere in the world can be told that they have AIDS based on the perception of skin color and lifestyle and the rest. So it's a multifactor. It's not just a disease. It's almost every disease in the poor world. It's almost every disease in the struggling world. It's almost every disease in the gay community. A gay guy in San Francisco who I know, who gets colds regularly, who takes antibiotics to treat them, and who has the side effects that you'd expect, which is a slightly weakened immune system taking these antibiotics. Every time he gets sick, you know, he's going to take the AIDS drugs. Well, you know, when I was growing up, there was always a guy or a girl in the class who was getting colds all the time, who took antibiotics all the time, who had a stuffy nose all the time. You know, if they were a straight white girl, they just, you know, that's what they had, or they had chronic fatigue syndrome or something like that. If you're gay, if you're black, you have AIDS. It's a brand name. Green monkeys, that kind of stuff. Robert Gallo, the guy that Ashanti brought him up a long time ago, he's a scientist who, and I use that word politely, is the guy at the NIH who was working as a failed cancer researcher. He was trying to convince people that cancer was caused by a virus. Another great almost religious movement inside of science today is to prove that everything is caused by a virus, and to look at nothing multifactorially. They want one cause for everything, and they want a couple of drugs for it.
And none of it has anything to do with diet.
None of it has to do with diet, stress, lifestyle, endemic situations, endemic stress, history, historical situations, like living in a gay ghetto, like living in a black ghetto, like living in a place in America where you're not sure if you belong or not, like worried if you're going to get shot emotionally, intellectually, or physically somewhere in your life all the time. Anyway, green monkeys, well, Robert Gallo wrote in his biography that the reason that AIDS was heterosexual in Africa had to do with what he called, and I quote, ritual voodoo practices.
Mm.
So this is who's running the show, this is ritual voodoo practice.
We're going to take a break. Talking to Liam Sheff, independent investigative reporter, joining us from San Francisco. We're talking about AIDS. I'm also joined in the studio with Wake Up Call intern Ashanti Hamilton. We're having a discussion. I see y'all have all kinds of questions out there. We'll get to some of those when we get back. Stay with us. Tons of questions.
Life need to be energized? Are you in need of some direction and clarity? Is it time to make a change? Tune in to Sort It Out with professional organizers Lori and Claire, Wednesdays from 10 to 11 a.m., and we'll share with you everything we know from our expertise in organizing, be it life, home, or business, to us motivating and empowering you to go after your dreams and goals.
We are known as the dynamic duo, and we can rescue you from your organizing challenges. We want to encourage you to get real with your life and regain control.
It's time to start.
Ready, go. Blue Man Group Live. You've seen their theatrical shows. Now, experience what a Blue Man does to a rock concert. It's incredible. Dazzling. Overload your senses. Blue Man Group.
Your attention, please.
Live.
It's time to start.
Blue Man Group. With guest vocalist Tracy Bonham.
Up to the
energy. Capture it live.
Rock
concert movement number one.
Charter Communications welcomes the Megastar Tour.
Blue Man Group. Saturday, October 21st, the Scott Trade Center, formerly Savas Center.
Here are your instructions.
Get tickets now at the Scott Trade Center box office. All Ticketmaster ticket centers. By phone at 314-241-1888 or 618-222-2900 and online at Ticketmaster.com. Get yours. Please yell if you are paying attention.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Come away with me in the night. Come away with me and I will write you a song.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This morning I am in the studio with Ashante Hamilton. We're having a discussion with Liam Sheff, an independent investigative reporter joining us from San Francisco, the San Francisco Bay Area, to talk about the AIDS myth. And Liam, let's get to some more of our callers and questions out here.
Yep.
Steve.
Hey, how you doing this morning, Liz?
Outstanding.
I kind of understand where y'all are going with it, but I'm kind of lost a little bit. So they're saying that the AIDS is not a such thing as an AIDS virus, or that it is, and they're just giving it, they're just saying you got it because you're more at risk with it.
All right, thanks for your question and comment. Liam?
Well, from my point of view, I'm not a reductionist. The quest, viruses exist. There are all sorts of things that happen in the body. You can read the literature on whether there's a particular thing in AIDS patients. Now, there's no test that finds a particular thing. I'm very clear about that. So you can't say that there's a particular thing in AIDS patients because you can't test for a particular thing. AIDS is, again, a brand name put on people throughout the world who have almost any condition. So, you know, the question is about sexuality is the third question. You can argue it the mainstream way, and they'll cite the studies in which they say that they've either proven sexual transmission or disproven sexual transmission. And the study they'll look at the most is called the Padian study. And the Padian study was a 10-year study, and there was a 6-year active period where they were. This was in the Bay Area again, in Berkeley, San Francisco area. It took 175 couples. In one of the couples, they considered to be, you know, HIV positive based on the test. One member of each couple they considered to be HIV negative. So in each couple, there's one person who they say is positive and one person who say is negative. Over a 6-year period, everybody admits to having sex without condoms at some point. Some people admit to having anal sex. In fact, there's a high degree in the beginning of people having sex without condoms. At the end of 6 years, well, why don't you guess? How many people who were negative did they determine were positive? The end of 6 years, having sex with a person who was positive.
What did they conclude?
Zero. The number was zero. Mm. There was no what they called transmission or seroconversion. Now, it doesn't mean anything to me because they're using tests that don't find anything that they interpret based on risk group. But if you hold to this sort of religious idea that there's a particular thing and you have to debate it, you know, that's not really what I'm into. It's just not even a single disease. It's almost anything that occurs anywhere in the world, and then it's sort of backward validated through a number of artifices. One is a T-cell counting. You go in and you say, oh, we consider you to be at risk for AIDS. Now we're going to start counting your T-cells. If you did this to somebody who had any other illness, you would find similar results as you find in somebody, you know, who has any of the illnesses that you now label AIDS. So if that's a roundabout answer, what I talked about before was that there's an element of this that which is deeply it's sexual prohibition in a sense. And I'm not speaking in favor of sexual liberation or against sexual prohibition. I'm simply pointing out that the center of what we consider AIDS is a deep, I think, unspoken concern about who has sex and how they have sex with whom. What you notice when you walk through Pacific Heights in San Francisco or through La Jolla, California, or Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, or the or Park Avenue, is that you're not bombarded with ads for how you behave sexually.
Mm.
It's not there. Mm. It's irrelevant. When you go to an expensive university, I've been to college. I know what I've been 20. I know how people at 20 behave. If there were a sexually transmitted disease that would kill you in a certain number of years, everybody at University of California would be dead.
Mm.
They are not dead. There is no particular sexual thing going on. It's an illusion. But the idea is, do we need sexual prohibition? Of course we do. If there were no sexual laws, no woman would be safe. I mean, you know, that men when they reach a certain age are barely able to contain their libido. And it takes all of the fear and learning and discipline, you know, of elders who are willing to punish them to get them to behave. Well,
it's
you know.
True. Look, I've been 20 before, too, and I've been with 20-year-old men, so I understand. I understand exactly what you're saying.
And I'm 22, and
I know you know.
Exactly.
Right. So the idea that we need sexual prohibition, no, I'm not a sexual liberationist. You know, that's not it. There are a couple things that we need prohibitions against. One is war. One is, having sex with whoever you want.
I'm sorry. I need to get to some of our callers here because people are kind of going crazy here.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Otis.
Yes, this is an important program to me because tomorrow I'm supposed to kick off a anti-AIDS program down here, passing out condoms, pictures of the symptoms of AIDS. But the other thing I want to say is that I have a 27-year-old stepson who's in a little urine here. He's supposedly died of AIDS. He's white, middle-class pharmacist. He died of what we call AIDS. What did he die of? You know, I'm looking at the urine gun. Oh, my God. This is really one of the greatest shows that I've heard, and it's gonna make a lot of things happen around me. I know that.
Thanks for your question and comment, Otis.
Thank you.
Liam.
Oh, yes. I don't know. I like that Otis called. You know, people die. People die all the time. If you call it AIDS, we all feel our breath sort of gets, oh, he died of AIDS. We all feel our breath sort of gets sucked away. Oh, he died of AIDS. What does that mean? You know, when the doctors say somebody dies of AIDS, they say they died of pneumonia, and then they say it was AIDS-related pneumonia. And it's AIDS-related pneumonia because they gave that person a test. And maybe that person was on a lot of drugs. You know, maybe they were somebody in the drug group. The so-called AIDS drugs that are, you know, stopping your cells from producing blood cells and this kind of thing. I don't know what somebody died of. I've gotten this question over and over again. Well, my friend died of this. Well, tell me about your friend. Well, he was a heroin user. And, you know, he was trying to go clean. Was he clean? He was trying to go clean.
Well, one of the things that we're hearing, Liam, is the newest growing group of people that become tested, that test positive for AIDS are our seniors. That seniors are now active with Viagra out there. We have older women and older men engaging in sex in a way that they haven't in generations before because we have this drug out there that makes it possible for older men to do that. Older men, and the theory is that older men are getting with younger girls and younger girls are giving them AIDS.
I wish I knew some of these younger girls when I'm older, but I hope to know them. But I don't... little joke.
I get it.
Okay. What can I say? This is the way it works. It's again the church in Washington, the NIH, the Pope in Rome. The mythical, the AIDS Pope, I'm sort of making that analogy, says, remember the testing works for the people who we say it works for, and what's the risk group? The risk group is sex. Well, of course the risk group isn't sex. The risk group is sex that turns our head, that makes us ask questions. Because if it were sex, everybody who had a child would always be tested. And they don't do that. And the reason they don't do that at this point is because they haven't totally lost their minds. When they totally lose their minds, we'll all know and the whole thing will fall apart. But you can't use these tests on everybody because then they have too much of a fault, what they consider a false positive rate.
Mm.
They actually have to tell people, well, you know, you're not really positive. Well, why is that? Well, you're not in a risk group, but I just tested reactive. Well, you're not in a risk group. Either take it or leave it. I'll take it. And that's what I was reading earlier in the last hour. This is from the AIDS Alert magazine from March 1998 when they were going to introduce these rapid tests, which is now what they're using. And they talked about a very high error rate with the test, and it says that error rate won't matter in areas with a high prevalence of HIV because in all probability, the people testing false positive will have the disease.
You know, that is the most ridiculous, obscene thing that I've ever heard. That is ridiculous and obscene, particularly when you tie that to the fact that this is a disease that supposedly you die from. So they're going to give you a diagnosis of death out of based upon, well, you probably, you know, you're in that risk group, so you probably already have it. So that's ridiculous and obscene.
Well, and you'll like it even more. But if the same test was performed on 1,000 white, affluent suburban housewives, a low prevalence population, in all likelihood, all positive results will be false and positive predictive value. And that's how they...
Based on what?
Plummet to zero. Based on the positive predictive value. The tests don't mean anything. I told you, it's a pseudoscience. It's a gateway. We get you in. We use the pseudoscientific jargon of the tests. You know, the tests come up positive for everything. We don't worry about that. Just trust us.
Because of the group that we're looking at.
Yeah, because of the group that you're looking at. But it's not sex that you're looking at. And I've tried to point this out to my, you know, lily white friends who get bent out of shape when I talk about this. And, you know, the wink-wink joke is that sex is, you know, something that everybody does, everybody has. And that we then look at these seniors or we look at black women and we say, ah, it's their sex that we have to worry about. Therefore, the tests are accurate.
Mm.
The false positive rate, it won't matter because they'll actually have the disease.
Mm. Ah, that's obscene. Let me get to some of these calls. That is so obscene and offensive. Tim.
How are you doing?
Fine. You have a question for our guest?
Yes, I have one question. I want to ask your guest, what would you tell Magic Johnson?
I asked that question last night.
Yeah, Ashanti and I talked about that.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. He's a rich dude. You know, he's a famous black guy, and he came up through a time when the country was still, and still is, wondering how it feels about being, you know, white and black and different things. And they got to him, and they said, you're going to take this test, and so you're going to be in the risk group. And he, lo and behold... They decided that he was positive, and they decided that he should take some of the drugs and advertise for some of the drugs, and he did, and he's been very obliging about that.
And do we really know what drugs he's taking?
No. No, we don't. He advertises for some of the protease inhibitors. He can do what he wants to. He also advertises for a brand of herbal, nutritional stuff called Herbal Insure. I'd like to ask him, golly, what do you think about the fact that you took a test that doesn't tell you that you have anything?
Mm.
I'd like to ask him that. I don't know. But, you know, who knows what he'd say.
Mm. One real quick question. Will, you got a quick question?
Yes, I do. Well, this is, I've always thought that it was a political social control aspect to this thing about AIDS. And then being a gay person myself who took one AIDS test in his lifetime before I began to learn some of the things that Mr. Sheff is talking about, the psychological implications of that, when you tell somebody that you've got a death sentence now, I said, I will never go through this again, sitting back and waiting on those results. But my thing is...
Yeah, quick question, please.
Oh, okay. So the drugs, they do break down, they attack the cells on a DNA level, so what actually the drugs themselves become more toxic. And I would also like to talk about the social control aspect of it.
All right, thank you, Will. We'll be back. Liam Sheff. I'm Liz Brown. Ashanti Hamilton is with me. We'll be back.
For the issues that matter most to you, of course, it's AM 920 WGNU. This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA.
This is your wake-up call, global news update. Dateline Caracas. The president of Venezuela has floated the idea of creating a new independent bank that would help South American countries gain financing for their own development projects. President Hugo Chavez said he is tired of having the kind of development for fellow nations dictated by the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, which are led by the countries of North America. His comments were made last week in Havana at the annual summit of the Non-Aligned Movement, a group of over 100 countries that consider themselves not to be formally aligned with any major power bloc. And Dateline Washington. Congress is currently considering a new piece of legislation called the Student Teacher Safety Act of 2006. If adopted, this law would allow any school that gets federal funding to put into place policies allowing for the searching of any or all students at any time for any reason. These searches could be a look inside a book bag, a pat-down, or even a full-blown strip search if officials wanted to go that far. This bill was not examined by a committee, but instead was fast-tracked to the floor of the House. It is supported by leading House Republicans as well as the National Education Association, but is opposed by a number of school officials' organizations. A case in South Carolina back in 2003 brought school searches to national prominence, and in that case, a police SWAT team carrying machine guns was sent into a high school because the principal suspected someone was selling marijuana. 150 students were handcuffed and made to lay on the floor as drug dogs went through their belongings. Nothing was discovered in that search. This current piece of legislation is labeled House Resolution 5295. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Hey everybody, this is Scott Cooper. Stay tuned for my show, Floral Design Inside and Out, coming up next on WGNU.
Honey, everything's coming up roses.
Around the world, and behind the story, it's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I ran away today, ran from the noise, ran away. Don't wanna go back to that place, but don't have no choice, no way. It ain't easy growing up in World War III. Never know what love could be that I've seen. I don't want love to destroy me like it did my family. Can we be a family?
Oh, can we work it out? This is Liz Brown and the Wake Up Call. My guest this morning is Liam Sheff. He's an independent investigative reporter joining us from the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm also in the studio with Ashanti Hamilton, her first radio interview. This is her story. This is the information that she wanted to bring to you as one of my interns. And Liam, if we can, I know you probably want to address some of the questions that Will asked, but Ashanti has a question that we need to address in the last 6 or 7 minutes of the show here.
Okay, I want to go back to when we were talking about the AIDS drugs, the AZT and the Nevirapine, and we were talking about the distribution of them in Africa. In one of your articles entitled The Truth About Nevirapine Stepping Over Bodies on the Way to the Market, and you said these drugs are deadly. But in the article, it says a Nevirapine is the key component of George W. Bush's $500 million donation to get AIDS drugs to Africans. Can you kind of explain?
You mean how a drug that's deadly can be sold?
Exactly.
Anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Africa is a place that, you know, most Americans will never go. I've never been there. Some of my friends have.
I've been there.
You have?
I've
okay.
been there numerous times.
Numerous times, and I'll probably end up going if life is generous. There's some places I want to see. But most people don't go there, and to them it is still the dark continent, and it is very far away. And all you need to do is show a picture of a starving child, and I saw something in the paper, in a magazine the other day, and I said, oh, here they go again. And I looked at this poor starving child, and it actually said a child suffering from malnutrition, and I thought, well, thank goodness. They didn't say what they always say these days, which is a child suffering from AIDS. They used to just say malnutrition, and you probably remember there are all the Christian groups that go there and try to deal with that. I said before, our religion is capitalism more than anything else. and we can make money selling the drug, even if it's a terribly dangerous drug, because the perception among the well-versed intellectuals is, well, it's the best we can do. I mean, you know, you have to weigh the consequences. If we don't give them this drug, they'll all die in 10 or 20 years. Okay, look, we're not on a Christian mission. Drug companies aren't on a Christian mission. They're not taking the message of, you know, Jesus to you know what I mean, to die for everybody's sins or to do good and to turn the other cheek. They're there to make money. And if they're not there to make money, then they're going to go out of business. So they're there to make money. Why do they use such dangerous drugs? I think it's psychotic. I think it's part of their psychosis. I think they're mentally ill. I don't have any other answer than the fact that they've gotten so far out of the realm of normalcy in looking at this thing, that they're, you know, to me it's like a child who's misbehaving, you know, who's been done something wrong, just begging for attention to get found out. You don't give people drugs that are this poisonous, I think, unless you want somebody to say, hey, wait a second, why are these people dying this way?
Or, Liam, you give people these drugs that are this dangerous because you know that you can. You know that you can still make money off of this. I mean, the drug companies have always experimented upon Americans. They just haven't been able to experiment on them and get away with it to the same amount that they would in Africa. If you demonize a continent, then it's easy to go in there and experiment on people and call it God's gift to those people, and we're doing something wonderful for it. I mean, and there's that, you have the wonderful line in the article, how does a drug that kills Americans save Africans? Well, that's all wrapped up in that whole twisted issue of racism and how we view each other and what we're allowed to do.
Amen. I couldn't say it better.
So this drug kills people in America.
It kills people in America. It killed Joyce Ann Hafford, who was a woman in the South who took the drug for a few weeks and died she was able to give birth to her child. They gave her a C-section to get the child out, and then she died of liver problems associated or caused by the drug. And everybody admitted that it was so, and everybody sort of said, whoops. But this was well known for years. This is the drug called nevirapine. And this is a key component of what everybody who wants to get into Africa with these drugs wants to sell, this drug more than anything. And they want to give it to pregnant women. And again, it's a drug that can kill, and it kills violently, and it can rip the skin from your body. It stops the normal production of cells, and it has some very bizarre, very violent effects. It's like a flogging. It's, you know, all that strange stuff.
And as Ashanti said, that this is the key component of George Bush's plan of getting his AIDS package into Africa.
Yeah, and I assume that, you know, Bush was, you know, pressured by all the various AIDS lobbies to do something, and the various drug lobbies in America and in Africa to do something. You know, oh, you have to do something. You know, Clinton was good to the gay community. You have to do something. So what does it mean to spend $15 billion on Africa? Well, you're not putting in clean water systems. What you're doing is you're giving money to the company Boehringer Ingelheim, which produces the poisonous drug, to build factories, which essentially is putting money back into the pockets of European and American investors and builders. You then distribute the drug in Africa. You know, I guess we've paid for it already. You essentially get African governments to, and African governments will open their door. If you say, I have X amount of dollars, $30 million, and remember they have $15 billion to use, we can give your government $30 million. We can give you, and you know, you who run this branch of this government, a couple million dollars, as long as you let this drug in. Oh, what are you going to say? No, I mean, these countries struggle. These countries are ripped apart by any number of issues, some of them man-made, some of them geographical, some of them, you know, climactic, some of them natural.
And also this agenda was not lost on black leadership. We had the president of South Africa speaking on this and seeing this for what this is. Mbeki.
Yeah. He's anybody who really talks about this regularly is going to have their head handed to them. So they call him a denialist and that sort of thing. And so he's just this guy who's been trying to look after the well-being of his people. And he's said, look, we had these diseases before, and now you tell us that it's our sex that's doing it, and you want to give us drugs that can kill us. Mm. And I'm not in favor of that. So the New York Times gets to attack him. The New York Times has attacked me. And the New York Times attacks anybody who gets in the way of the AIDS machine.
Mm. One or two more questions here. Richie.
Yeah, I got two questions. One question is, the Africans have been living with those monkeys, and the monkeys carry a disease called simian immune deficiency virus. Does that virus jump across species, like from humans to from the monkeys to the humans when they eat the monkey meat?
And the second question?
The second question, has he read Edward Cooper's book called The River about Jonas Salk and those other scientists experiment with leukemia and polio in the early 20s and 30s?
Thanks for your call.
All right. To the first question, you know, I'm not dispositionally, I'm not a reductionist. I don't. It's not my view through experience and reading in life that, you know, complex problems are caused by one thing. We don't really, we tend to misunderstand viruses. We're full of what we call viral-like particles. We're just full of all sorts of little particles. You can look any time and anybody you want, and you can say, oh, we believe you have some sort of particle, and we'll assemble it based on this protein and this strand of genome. It doesn't mean that it's doing anything. The idea that something jumps from monkeys to humans, well, I assume that everything jumps from everything to everything most of the time. It's not really my concern, because that's not what AIDS is. AIDS is diagnosed clinically. It's anything that anybody gets that can have the brand name slapped onto it. I haven't read that book. I'm aware of problems with the polio vaccine, in answer to his question.
And, Liam, you have a website out here?
It's my name, Liam Schaeff, LIAMSCHEFF.com.
Well, thank you, Liam, for everything. It's definitely been a wonderful experience. Thank you, Liz, for having me on the show. And hopefully those of you listening can go spread the word.
And also one of the things that you can do is go to whiterosesociety.org. The show will be up there today. The 2 hours will be up there today. Spread the word. Tell them to take a listen to the show. Liam, I want to thank you as well. Thank you for joining me again this morning.
Thank you both very much.
All right, take care now.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Tonight is the school board meeting, 7 o'clock at Car Lane. Be there. School board meeting tonight at 7 o'clock. Car Lane, be there. I'll be here same time, same place tomorrow morning. Stay strong.
Pull it out 6 inches. There's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound, that's the blow, that's the low name.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel me, brothers. Help me, sister.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
So we say to all in this nation who dare